So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Of a new global audience that's going to learn that it all started here tonight. I promise you, I will be the Messiah of the New Breed Unleashed, the Rabbi of the Revolution, the Swinging Schlong of the Extreme! Now we go back to where we were. This is better than Monday Night Raw. This is better than Friday Night SmackDown. Welcome to the rebirth of E.G.
See me die and see me fly. I call all the shots, rip all the spots, rock all the rocks, cop all the drops. I know you're thinking now when all the ball stops. You never home, gotta call me on the yacht. 10 years from now, we'll still be on top. Yo, I thought I told you that we won't stop. Now, what you gonna do?
Welcome, everyone, to Review a Raw. It's John Pollock.
No. Review Away.
What did I say? Oh, fuck. Welcome to Review Away, everybody.
Yeah.
It's John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting.
Mm-hmm.
You doing good, Wei?
Doing okay.
Last time you said you were doing okay, and then you said you weren't. So what is it?
Yeah, let me think about that. I actually have to consider it.
Now, what's your week been like?
My week? Good.
Yeah. Because we're getting crucified online.
It's not our fault. Not the fault of us. Well, you know, it sort of is, I guess, because we do have
everything
control.
Lands on us.
But come on. Who cares?
People leaving our group...
Not too many death threats sent to me. Not too many. What do you think people are more outraged about? The fact that the Facebook group has changed, or the spoilers that have been just rampant on the group?
I have an interesting debate on both of these because first of all, whenever you change something, inevitably people they hate it. Mm. Just detest change, especially when it comes to a personal one-on-one medium such as the internet. Your email format changes, your Facebook layout changes. People will always resist change, especially I find with online. How many websites change and you hate it, and then a month goes by and there's no difference?
That's not true. There's some websites where that change and
the
then
majority
of the
way
back.
People get used to the changes, and within a month you can't even remember the old layout because you've had so many impressions on a day-to-day basis of this new version. Not that I'm defending the new Facebook layout. I hate it. It sucks. The spoilers, that I don't understand, guys. Like, come on. In this day and age where we live in a world of Twitter and instant reporting, how do you expect to go from Tuesday to Friday without hearing about a title change? And, like, wouldn't you actively avoid going to certain pages, such as a wrestling forum? And we are suddenly supposed to be the police that are going to delete people's posts because they're talking about an event that has already happened.
No, I didn't sign up for that. But, you know, it has been something that we've been dealing with for the past decade.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just different, but I have never cared about reading about something beforehand. Like, I always read what happens on SmackDown and Impact before it happens. It never hurts my enjoyment of a program.
But you watch from a journalistic perspective. There are people there that many people are in a group that just watch as fans that want to watch SmackDown the same way people view Raw. You know,
but it's not Raw. It's not live. And that's one of the downsides. And if you think that you can just create an online community where you can customize it to your likings, I'm sorry. Listen, I want as many people to be part of our group as possible. But if you don't want spoilers and avoid it, then I'm sorry. Leave the group or don't log in for those amount of days. If I, Wei, worked on a Sunday night and missed the Super Bowl, and my goal was tomorrow night I'm going to watch the Super Bowl on my PVR, I wouldn't be going to sportsjournal.com to read news hoping to avoid the Super Bowl results. It's happened. Whether it's aired or not, it has happened. And the online world is going to talk about what happened. And you cannot censor people's thoughts and postings on a Facebook page that talks about wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, that's just, it's not a logistic, a logical assumption to make in 2011.
On most weeks, I think we can all get by with avoiding spoilers, but when it comes to a big, big, big story like what had happened on Friday with Christian losing the title, I think it really is unavoidable. People just want to express their outrage, and they're not going to wait until Friday to do it.
I put on the Law website, I did not give out the result. I just said simply title change at SmackDown tapings. Yeah. You can click on it if you want. On Facebook, you cannot control what people are going to write. And if you think you can, you're insane.
There are people that want to simply talk about what had happened.
Good on them. I don't have any problem with that. It's out there. So if you want to debate it, debate. I'm sorry. I don't have any sympathy for people with the spoiler issue. So if that really upsets you, then that would be an example of maybe...
Stay off the internet.
Stay off the internet. Zone out from the world until Friday at 10:01 Eastern time, and then you can return to civilization. That's my thoughts on that. In terms of the Facebook debacle, Wei, what's our latest? Are we
we've been talking about various other options, and
by the time you hear this, we might have shifted to a fan page. Is that correct?
I believe so. I mean, the leading candidates right now are either we go to a fan page or a message board outside. But I like to stick within Facebook. I like Facebook.
Yep, I agree. I wouldn't want to abandon Facebook at all. Though I just don't understand this group changeover where our only option to satisfy people is by blowing up this group we've work to build up for 2 years almost, and to have to start from scratch and get people to join.
It really is the fault of Facebook. As much blame as I originally put on Scott McCullough, I did, you know, he was only speeding up the inevitable. It's Mark Zuckerberg and company that is to blame. They just don't like groups for whatever reason, and they want to change the group format.
I just don't understand how there has to be a way where you can disable the amount of messages. When anything gets posted, you get a notification.
Oh, you can turn off all notifications. I don't seem to get any of them.
That's annoying. That seems to be a consistent problem for people. Not to your email. I mean, just in your Facebook, you get the red number every time someone posts anything.
I don't mind that. It makes me feel popular.
Oh, I hate it.
Gives me something exciting to look forward to.
Well, that seems to be what everyone complains about. I disabled my email notifications years ago. Those were the worst.
Yes. I forgot what I was going to say. Sorry.
All right. Facebook with the big ball drop.
What do you think? Should we announce something by the end of the episode?
I don't know.
Let's decide right now. What do you think we should be doing?
Well, this current... I can't fathom this group situation remaining with Facebook. Like, who could like this?
How
can we not rectify this problem?
I had read up on this new group format, and I think the belief is that... Your groups are supposed to be the new group format is really meant for, you know, let's say you, Jason, Justin, Rob, and me are a close group of friends. It would be for something like that. And if we all wanted to participate in a discussion with the five of us together or your family or whatever, you can do that. But it's not really conducive to a group that has 1,500 people.
So let's just move to a fan page.
Yeah, I think so too.
We'll keep the group up so people know to migrate over. But Okay, by the time you hear this, we'll have set up a fan page and go join it. We're recording this on Thursday, so let's just say by the end of Thursday, maybe we'll have a fan page set up and you can slowly make your way. And we'll be posting shows on both groups, so you know.
We actually do already have the fan page set up. It's just private right now, but by the time that this comes out,
okay, let's make that public then and move people over. I like the fan page layout 100 times better. My one problem I noticed is that on the fan page, you can't make links, like it's not a clickable link.
What are you talking about?
Can you bring up the mock-up we have?
Yeah, let me.
And go to the info section where past shows are listed, and it's not a hot link. It's just the text of the link.
Really?
Yeah.
If you go to the info section?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah, I noticed
maybe,
that.
Maybe we can put it under websites. You know, or I guess maybe that won't. Well,
everything sucks.
Whatever. It's not a hot link, but people can copy it. Yeah, whatever. Copy and paste it. Whatever. Who cares? Or our listeners aren't idiots. They can copy and paste the link.
All right.
Believe us, in the future, and we're talking, you know, within the year, we're going to have everything overhauled. Our website will be overhauled. You won't have to, you know, work as hard as you guys do to look for shows.
I really hope that at some point we can look back and laugh at the technology we dealt with in the early days of this show. Because, believe me, it's frustrating at times, folks. Believe me. But if you have to get your anger out, feel free to send it to me in Way. We're very thick-skinned, and we love hearing how much you guys hate how we ruin your lives.
I don't get too much of that.
And then I get it, so that's fine.
Okay.
I'm all fine with it. Let's get into our review, Way, because that's what people download this show to listen to.
Yeah.
Or copy and paste a link and put it into another website. ECW One Night Stand, Way, 2006, from the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. This was when you were call screening for us.
Yes, I was.
And this was the weekend I went to my first time I went to the Cauliflower Alley Club with Dan Labransky, and we got to the studio 10 minutes before the pay-per-view started. Thought I was going to miss it.
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, it was you and Jay, and we were going to make it there, but we just didn't know when, and we got there just as the show was about to start.
Oh.
And this was a show I really did want to see. Like, usually there's a pay-per-view, it's like, well, whatever. If I'm not there, it's not the end of the world. But this was a show, especially coming off the heels of the 2005 show. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interest going into this.
Yes, and of course, coming off the news that the ECW brand was to be revived permanently.
There was tons of optimism at this point. It's like, ECW's coming back. They're going to have this awesome pay-per-view.
At what point do you think that plan was put into motion? Exactly when?
Oh, I think it had been, in 2004, they had the huge success with the DVD. Mm-hmm. Then the pay-per-view did tremendous, like somewhere in the neighborhood, I don't know the exact number, like 350,000 buys, like an insane number as compared to what numbers are today. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they sold a ton of merchandise. And the story was that on a trip, on a plane during a European tour, I think it was right after WrestleMania that year in 2006, Vince just basically said, let's bring back ECW. And the whole idea at first was that Shane would run it as just an online property, and it would just simply be on the web, and Heyman would be involved.
It would take over Velocity.
Yeah, it was.
What else are you doing with that slot? Nothing. You're shooting Velocity.
Yeah.
So why not turn it to
ECW?
And
it was
going to
be strictly on the internet, kind of like what Superstars and NXT are today. And it was going to be really pushed, like for mobile phones, and really be a kind of a progressive property for the WWE. But then, as things continued to grow, they got the deal with Sci-Fi, and it was basically turned into a third brand. And kind of the power was taken out from Shane. Shane kind of was left without. This was going to be his brand to run, and his role was significantly downgraded to pretty well nothing. And at this point, we should mention we're going to be joined later in the show by Dave Lagana, a regular here on Review Away, because he was instrumental here in this launch, because he was leaving SmackDown at this time as the lead writer when Alex Greenfield was put into that spot, and Lagana was going to be put here onto ECW to run this show alongside Paul Heyman. So probably nobody would have as much insight into the launch, relaunch of ECW than David Lagana.
Yeah.
If we ever take this show public, is that?
Yeah. If we ever
Dave Lagana like has equity, I think, in this show, because we call on that man so often to come on this show because he's just got so much information
that
it's like, who better would there be to talk about with this?
And no, there really is nobody. I mean, you know, speaking as about Dave Lagana.
Vince wants to do our show. He's always welcome on Review Away.
Absolutely. But, Dave Lagana, head of the WWECW extension there for a while, and also himself a huge ECW fan originally at the time. So I'd love to get his perspective coming from that point of view.
That's going to be coming up later, but that was pretty much the impetus behind the rebirth here of ECW. And heading into this show, they had done a WWE versus ECW television special that they aired some highlights of throughout. Mm-hmm. And then going into the pay-per-view, this was the big launch for them. And then going into the TV show, that would be two nights later, which, as I recall, Way, I don't know if you were with us, but ECW didn't have a Canadian broadcaster for the first couple of months. So we all went to O'Grady's on a Tuesday night to watch ECW on Sci-Fi.
Wow.
Which is insane to think about that when you think of where that show went.
Yes, it was. But no, I was not with you guys at that time. But I'm sure it was fun.
Way was well ahead of the curve when it came to streaming online.
But yes, the one-night stand concept, of course, the year prior was really just a reunion show.
To be a one-off.
And just featured ECW guys against former ECW guys. But this year, it was very different. It was pitting ECW wrestlers as the babyfaces against WWE stars as the heels in the matches.
The show started out with Paul Heyman coming out, proclaiming the rebirth. And then did the live audio wrestling opening.
Another Jason Agnew soundbite. All I can think of is the law from
I know, I know. He says that they're on pay-per-view, they're on national television starting this Tuesday, and states it's a better deal than the one they had before as a knock at TNN. And he thanks the fans for bringing ECW back, saying if ever there was a truth behind the term backed by popular demand, ECW is it.
Mm-hmm.
Calls himself the rabbi of the revolution, the sweeping schlong of the extreme.
Yeah.
And welcomes us to the rebirth of ECW. So the crowd was really hot here for Paul Heyman to start the show.
Incredible promo. He at one point he said, this is better than Monday Night Raw. This is better than Friday Night SmackDown. So I'm sure he got the okay. I'm sure Vince even encouraged, take jabs at us. And so it seemed like they were all well aware that the appeal of ECW was that it is not WWE.
And to the credit of the WWE, I mean, a lot of people would think, there's a lot of bad that WWE did to the ECW brand overall. But for these two one-night stand shows, they at least understood that they had to be the heels in this. Which
absolutely
is an impressive step for the WWE to acknowledge and go forward with. But it would have been very easy for them to present WWE as the baby faces and not allow certain comments to be made. Like that first one-night stand show, I mean, you were amazed at like them openly poking fun at the WWE brand and positioning themselves as this rogue third brand.
Yeah, and it worked great for these two, but why wouldn't that concept just be taken throughout the history of this relaunch? Why did they stop after this?
We then go to the opening video for the show, and then the show opens up with Joey Styles solo at the commentary desk, and then Taz comes out to his old theme music, and he gets into the ring. I completely blanked on Taz wrestling on this show. I've not watched this show since
I forgot until
the initial pay-per-view
just now.
And then Jerry Lawler comes out to a great heel reaction wearing his crown. Chance of "you suck dick" directed at Jerry Lawler.
Mm-hmm.
And then Styles pokes fun at Lawler for having a paunch and gaining some weight. And then Lawler walks over and he slaps Joey Styles. Some great heat to start.
Yeah.
And we get Taz and Jerry Lawler. And Taz was pretty well retired at this point. He didn't wrestle in the 2005 show. I don't think he had any interest in wrestling. But they put this angle together. The match starts with Joey coming into the ring, jumping onto the back of Lawler. Lawler flips him off, and Taz applies the Taz mission. Goes to the ground. The referee lifts Lawler's arm three times, and Taz is your winner in seconds. This is a very short match. Crowd popped big for it. And Jerry Lawler taps out to the Taz mission. Very simple.
I understand that Taz was probably not for wrestling, but can the guy not even take a bump? He's been more well protected in his in the past decade than Bret Hart has.
He's had neck problems.
Oh, so what? The guy can at least.
He got his back and then fell backwards.
Oh, that was Taz mission.
Technically a bump.
Listen.
I had no problem with the booking of this match.
I had no problem too, but there are people that here that were paying to see Taz wrestle.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
They were paying to see Taz do his entrance.
No, I wouldn't say so. Maybe you wanted
a suplex out of him, but Jerry Lawler is not taking a suplex.
Why not?
Because he doesn't want to. He doesn't have to.
I didn't want to see Taz
and Jerry Lawler for any longer than this was.
Okay. But I'm just saying, look at Lawler and Michael Cole. I'm just saying that match would have been
significantly better in half the time.
And Michael Cole did more in his match than Taz did.
And that was a detriment to that match.
Okay, but I'm just saying, if Taz is advertised on the card, I would at least want to see a few moves. And I'm just surprised that a former wrestler of his caliber can't even throw a punch anymore. When was the last time he actually did a real match? 10 years ago.
Well, he's not an active wrestler.
I know, but when was the last time you even saw him do a real move aside from the Taz mission?
Well, that's not really fair. He's not in a position where he has to be doing anything. It's not like he's going out every week and doing these garbage matches. He's a commentator.
I'm just saying, for a guy who used to be a wrestler who hasn't done, you know, who I think he must be well recovered. I'm just surprised that they're protecting him so much.
I just think it was, you know, you put a match together for the biggest reaction possible, and that's what this match got. They wanted to see Jerry Lawler get murdered, and he did.
No, I didn't even really get that sense, though.
You want Jerry Lawler to get shut up for bad-mouthing ECW, and here he gets destroyed by one of ECW's most prominent figures.
To me, I felt it was a bit of a letdown because it was so short. I never saw Lawler get beat up. I just saw him fake tap out.
He didn't tap out. He was unconscious, whatever. Well, you and I will disagree then. Best match of the year. Then we go back to Joey Styles, who is somewhat selling the effects here of Lawler slapping him. And then he throws to a recap of the WWE versus ECW special from this past week. And it features a battle royal with ECW versus WWE. And Big Show does this big rallying speech for Team WWE. And then the battle royal ensues. Big Show and Randy Orton are the last two, and everyone assumes they've won because they're both WWE, when Big Show rips off his Raw t-shirt and he reveals an ECW shirt. Big Show switching brands. Wasn't novel in 2006.
God, how does that make sense? How do you have an ECW reunion and put the Kurt Angle and the Big Show on ECW? How does that make sense?
Well, they were given the two draft picks.
I don't care. It screams of Kurt Angle being in the Alliance. I understand what you're saying.
It
takes away from the purity of the concept.
But I thought Kurt Angle, first of all, Kurt was super hurt at this point, and he could benefit from doing really short matches,
submission style. But you're looking at this from a logical point of view. I'm looking at it just simply as there was a Marvel versus DC battle in the comic books in the 90s. And imagine if somehow, for some reason, Superman switched over to Marvel to fight against Batman. How would that make sense?
Okay.
It's terrible.
I guess I just look at this roster. Look at this card,
yeah,
okay?
And
take out the WWE talent and imagine that roster has to carry a TV show and go draw on the house shows.
Okay, that's fine. Why don't you switch them over afterwards? But I just, for this one night stand show, especially comparing it to the year prior just seems so just so authentic,
yeah.
You know? And this year, it felt like it was just another WWE show under the branding of ECW.
Well, the thought process was that, you know, this is not a one-night show. This is a brand we're pushing, and we have to give them some star power to grow the brand. So
I don't think you necessarily needed that. I think if you pushed the actual ECW guys there hard enough, you could make stars out of them. Instead of putting the Big Show on, come on, is the Big Show adding anything to that brand?
Heyman was always a giant fan of Big Show.
I understand, but he's not ECW. He's the furthest thing from ECW.
Yeah, but the fact was, Way, though, like, a lot of these guys on this card were not going to last. Like, their bodies were broken here. I mean, Balls Mahoney, I mean, you got a year out of Sabu and Sandman, which was pushing it with those two. I mean, it's just very difficult to build a show around those guys. I thought Kurt Angle going over, I understand what you're saying. It's not ECW circa 95, but at the same time, it's the WWE handing ECW one of their top stars to try and get this brand over and be successful.
Yes, yes. Well, it all makes sense, but just watching this show on its own, it just was really odd to me that here was a guy just the year prior was in the balcony saying, you know, how much he hated ECW. Now he's suddenly fighting for them.
You're not supposed to remember that way.
Okay, fine.
Taz joins Styles on commentary, and that leads us to our second match of the evening, Randy Orton and Kurt Angle.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll give them credit. They really did a great job of getting Kurt Angle on the side of ECW, and the ECW fans were loving him.
See, I was really excited when they put Angle over here, because this is when you could see that UFC influence that Heyman was trying to put onto Angle. Like, here we had the mouth guard. You watch his offense in this match, very mixed martial arts themed, which you weren't seeing from Angle prior to this. And I thought this was kind of something unique you could do with Kurt Angle, and someone that the ECW audience would buy as a legit badass.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they took to him in this match. The best was when Orton came out here, did his pose in the corner with Pyro, and then Styles says, "Look, it's a WWF superstar."
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I thought that was great heat to do his WWE entrance here.
Mm-hmm. There is also during this entrance, as he walks out, this kid punches Orton in the arm as he walks out.
Is that why Orton looked at the kid?
Yeah,
and then pointed to his chin.
Yeah.
I just thought he did that. I didn't see the kid punch them.
Orton stops, and I'm positive that this was maybe a few years earlier, if he hadn't had the talks that he's already had.
He
punched this kid in the face right
2006,
on TV.
It was he wasn't in great shape in this point either. This was just months after he was like smoking a cigarette or something in front of a bunch of fans. And ended up not getting the title as a result. That was one of the reasons they didn't put the title on him. Like, he was a huge pain in the ass at this point. They also recapped Kurt Angle appearing on that WWE ECW special, where he made an open challenge to anyone from a four-sided, six-sided, or eight-sided fighting surface.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
Amazing that they actually acknowledged the six-sided ring. Angle's music, did you notice this was redone to eliminate the "you suck" chants?
It sucked. I mean...
That is ironic.
I understand doing that for that purpose, but it was just...
It just sounded like a horrible mix.
Sounded like a bad remix that some kid made in his basement.
Orton gets out of the ring early. Large chance of pussy. Angle's going for the ankle as fans are chanting, "break his ankle." They're completely behind Kurt here. Chant of "Angle's gonna kill you." Some of the chants on this show were just hilarious. Angle gets back. He gets the back of Orton and then gets his hooks in. Goes for a Kimura and then tries to work for a rear naked choke here on Orton. And he then slaps Orton. They chant, "you got bitch slapped." And the story here was basically Angle was out wrestling the sports entertainer in Randy Orton. And Orton then got the heat with a reverse chin lock. There were chants of "you can't wrestle." Angle reversed, got on top of Orton, and has his hands locked as Orton tries to bite his way out of that hold. Then they're back to a reverse chin lock and boring chance. Orton blocks two German suplexes by Angle, but then Angle on the third try gets it, and it gets a good pop after the near escapes by Orton. They exchange European uppercuts. Then Angle hits three consecutive German suplex spots right out of the Roy McDonald playbook.
Mm-hmm.
And then Orton counters an Angle slam into an arm drag, then a follow-up drop kick. Angle recovers, he takes the straps down and hits the Angle slam. Orton kicks out, then there's an ankle lock. Orton rolls out and hits a backbreaker for a two count. Orton then hits a cross body off the top, but Angle rolls through for a two count. And then we get into the finishing sequence where Angle is continually going for the ankle lock, gets it finally, gets it to the heel hook, and Orton taps out to a big pop for Kurt Angle. And as Kurt is leaving, he gets to the top of the ramp and yells, "ECW!"
Yeah.
This was a good match.
This was a great match. I really enjoyed it. I'll still be critical of the circumstances surrounding it. Like on an ECW reunion show, we're seeing Randy Orton versus Kurt Angle. That to
but
me
this
just
isn't a reunion
right.
show.
Okay, but then I really don't know if that's what they were leading you to believe with the marketing of this thing, especially considering what had happened the year before. The year before was a reunion show, and if I didn't watch any of the build-up and I was just tuning in because I loved last year's show, I would be expecting the same thing. You know what I mean?
You know, Heyman was, when he was on our show that year, he talked about how if ECW was it was around in 2006, he wouldn't be using the Sandman or Sabu.
Oh, no.
He wouldn't have been doing hardcore wrestling. ECW, he said, was always about trying to find what was next in pro wrestling and presenting that. And if it was a more UFC influenced product, that would probably been the flavor at that time, and that's what they would have been pushing towards. And that people, they associate ECW with the 95 hardcore matches and with those characters, but the fact is ECW was about trying to be progressive and moving into a different direction. It was never about the guys. It was more about the overall branding of this product as something that is progressive in professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand. I guess I just didn't really get that sense when I was watching Kurt Angle, you know, a very WWE, WWE produced guy coming out to his WWE music with his WWE catchphrases. Here wrestling for ECW, but nonetheless a very good match, and I've never seen a crowd so hot behind everything that Kurt Angle was doing. It was amazing.
Orton was selling the left ankle after the match. He calls for two referees to come help him out, and I thought that was just great, where he asked for help to get to the back. Fans chant pussy and get the fuck out at Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
They air a commercial for the upcoming ECW house shows, and they've spliced in old footage of ECW. Then up next, we have a tag match with Little Guido and Tony Mameluke, accompanied by Big Guido, taking on the team of Super Crazy and Tajiri. And Tajiri had left the WWE the year prior and was back here to do this show, just as a one-off. And early on, there's a bridging key lock by Tony Mameluke, and Styles notes that Taz isn't used to a play-by-play announcer that knows the name of holds. And then there's a chant of Nacho Libre, standing moonsault by Super Crazy to Tony Mameluke. There's a nice exchange between Little Guido and Tajiri where Tajiri went for a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, but Guido then transitioned into a Fujiwara armbar, and then Tajiri came back with a leg lock. There's a double tree of woe spot where Crazy and Tajiri set up Mameluke and Guido in each corner and delivered drop kicks. Mameluke pulled Guido out from taking a moonsault, and then Tajiri hit an acai moonsault. Crazy hit the acai moonsault to the floor. Big Guido then hit a giant lariat to Super Crazy on the floor, with Styles saying, "Can I get some marinara with those potatoes?" As Guido just killed this guy. Guido comes off the second rope with a drop kick while Crazy is in a camel clutch. Then we saw a double tarantula spot by Crazy and Tajiri on the ropes. Big Guido's in. He's taken down by the baby faces. And then Guido hits a drop kick to the back of Crazy, who is upside down on his head on the apron. He goes to the floor and then flips over the barricade in a bit of a overselling by Super Crazy. And then the finish comes with a double fisherman buster by the heels to Tajiri off the turnbuckle. And Guido and Mameluke get the win.
Mm-hmm. A very fun little match with a lot of very nice double team spots and a lot of great kicks from Tajiri, and
you must have loved the post match.
Oh, I loved it. Yes, absolutely.
Big Show comes out, has a big stare down with Big Guido, and he just kills everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Big Guido, the baby faces, the heels. He made everyone in this match look like complete idiots.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan of this.
Okay, well.
Wait a minute. You had no problem with that?
Well, I'm just going by your thinking. How would you be okay with Kurt Angle if you had a problem with the Big Show? They're just trying to promote their new show. To promote the monster on their new show. Tajiri's not coming back. Crazy's on SmackDown.
Was Crazy not part of ECW there? Guido was. Mameluke was. These guys look like complete idiots. You could have easily had Big Show do the big man power spot with Big Guido.
Mm-hmm.
Choke slam him, and the same would have been accomplished. Instead, you instantly labeled these four as complete idiots.
Sorry, what did you say? They could have done what?
They could have done the power spot with Big Guido and Big Show. Big Show chokeslams Big Guido.
Uh-huh.
And everything that was accomplished would have been accomplished by that. But you wouldn't have hurt your baby faces who had just... the heels who had just won.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby faces here who just looked completely stupid.
Was Super Crazy a part of the ECW relaunch?
I don't think he was, to be honest.
I mean, they don't care about Super Crazy. Their stock was in the Big Show. Who cares? I mean,
I just don't see why he had to murder Guido and Mama Luke as well. They just won this match. This was like the
because they don't care about them. Because they don't care. They only care about the Big Show. Their Big Show was what they considered was to be the money-making guy. And who cares about what happens to the FBI?
All right.
Great. I'm just saying, if your intent is to sell this new show, this new sci-fi show, then it fits with their line of thinking. If it was up to me, I wouldn't even. It's just so weird to see the Big Show on an ECW show. But granted, once he did that that Cobra Clutch backbreaker, he really got the crowd on his side. So, you know, whatever. Listen, I think when I was watching this show, I was really expecting more of what I saw the year before, and this is a completely different show.
Mm-hmm. Styles and Taz are talking on the at the commentary table, and then JBL interrupts them on the balcony, the infamous balcony from last year, and he calls it backyard quality wrestling show. He brings up the Blue Meanie incident from last year and brags about how he wasn't reprimanded for any of it.
Yeah.
Calls RVD a star because of the WWE and Vince McMahon. He can't believe Taz is leaving network television for sci-fi.
Oh my God.
Awesome. And announces that he is coming to SmackDown as their new voice to join Michael Cole. And he tells Taz he can take the phone book with him because he can see over the desk. This is an awesome promo.
This is a great promo from JBL. Almost too good. Too effective. Because before this, the crowd was incredibly hot. But afterwards... it seemed to take the steam out of the audience because, in my opinion, I thought JBL was making a lot of good points and he was almost insulting him too bad, like too harshly.
I don't know. I just took this as, you know, the heel who was ripping on ECW, which was kind of the theme of WWE coming into this and thinking they were above ECW. I never thought this buried ECW.
I don't think it... I don't think it necessarily buried them. I just thought he did such a good job of insulting people that it's tough to come back to that with any type of wit.
I have a hard time not enjoying any of this because this was the announcement of JBL going to SmackDown no one knew what was going to happen with it. Sometimes great promo guys are horrible on commentary, but JBL, his year run on a year and a half on SmackDown was
awesome.
Just great.
I think he has like the perfect type of personality, and he's really quick witted, and he has he's
got the heels
the
over so well.
Oh yeah,
and it was just and never buried anybody, which is what you would expect from him. Like he had a bit of a rough patch when he first started, but like 2 months in, this guy was fantastic.
Yeah, he was.
But him and Cole gelled well together.
Mm-hmm.
I would love at some point to review a SmackDown pay-per-view from that time period when JBL was doing commentary, because it was really – I really enjoyed
He had a great line in this promo when he said, it's very fitting that ECW is on the Sci-Fi Channel because you Star Trek geeks love the Sci-Fi Channel.
I see no women out here, and you're chanting about a male organ. Now tell me who's the fruit booty. I sat in that ring right there last year, 1 year ago, everybody's going hardcore, hardcore, while a certain fat, blue piece of crap sat there and bled and cried.
Do we have to listen to
and
this?
What happened? You guys get on your internet and say JBL is a bully. JBL is a bad guy. You know what happened to me? Do you know what happened to me when I knocked one of your boys out? Knocked his fat ass out. You know what happened to me? nothing.
My sentiments exactly.
Remember this. You paid to see me. I didn't pay to see any one of you.
It wasn't even advertised. What the hell's he talking about? I'm not even supposed to be here.
Taz, I want to thank you. Because if you hadn't left, they would have had to fire you. Because I'm announcing right now.
All right, great.
JBL's coming back. I am the voice of SmackDown. What you see on Fox News, what you see on thestreet.com, what you see on my nationally syndicated radio show, I am the voice of the A Show. And by the way, folks, you're in a minor league here. I am the voice of SmackDown, and you can take your telephone book with you because I can see over the desk.
Hey, congratulations. You and Michael Cole, the blinding the blind.
Go ahead and drink Paul Heyman's Kool-Aid, but know this, the greatest wrestler, the king of hardcore, the person who says that he is, come hell, come high water, come the creek don't rise, I am who I say that I am. And I am a wrestling god.
Okay, is he done now?
Now kiss my ass. This show sucks.
Why'd you come then? What an idiot.
This was a really good promo.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
I can't say anything bad about it. We had an ad for the Rise and Fall of ECW book. And then we go to our world title match. Rey Mysterio. Yes, everyone, he was the world champion at this point. In between doing jobs on SmackDown every week, he had time to defend the title on this pay-per-view against Sabu. And Mysterio, as you recall, Wei, when we reviewed the 2005 show, really didn't light the world on fire with his match with Psychosis.
A bad match.
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't well-received by the crowd. It wasn't what they wanted. They got WWE Rey, and they wanted ECW Rey. And I think Rey took that to heart here. Still came out with his POD Booyaka theme and pyro, but he wore his old robe. He had his tights on as opposed to the baggy pants. And just to confirm his somewhat insecurity, he wore a mask with the letters ECW on the back. Yeah. That I took as a bit of, come on. Let's have a little faith here. You're pandering way too much.
And it really didn't work because he was
He's the world champion of SmackDown. I don't think he had to represent ECW here.
And I don't think he should have. I think he should have played up the
whole
the
story was Sabu trying to win the title for ECW against the WWE.
Rey here, he's representing SmackDown. He's supposed to be playing a heel. But it was just interesting because Rey, I don't even know if the guy knows how to play a heel.
It would have been fun to watch him try.
Well, and I think he kind of tried, but it was really, it's so hard for Rey Mysterio to be taken as a bad guy, in my opinion. But the crowd didn't want to like him, I don't think.
Both men start with chairs to start the match. Taz calls Rey a suck-up for wearing the mask with the ECW letters on it. Sabu springs off the chair into the corner to hit Rey, kind of like a poetry in motion, but using the chair. Sabu then launches this chair into Rey, who's standing. This right in his face.
I know.
Full force. Whenever I watch that, it's like...
And that wasn't even the worst of what was to come.
No, this was an extremely dangerous match. Sabu then brought out a table, lodged it between the ring and the barricade. Sabu then ran into the ring, jumped off a chair onto the top rope. The problem was, before Sabu even launched off the chair, Rey had climbed off the table. But Sabu continued. He went to the top rope and then saw that Rey was moved, and he just kind of like jumped to the floor. But in jumping to the floor, went jaw first into the barricade and then started selling. This looked incredibly awkward. Then there was a camel clutch spot by Sabu when he recovered from his own bump to Chance of Sheik. Sabu was then standing on a table on the floor, took a seated senton by Rey off the top to the floor. At this point, the crowd was really into things here. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is an impressive move for a guy whose knees are shot. Sabu came back with the triple jump moonsault for a two count and landed on the face of Rey. It looked like his knee caught him right in the face. Not fun. Then Sabu missed a Arabian facebuster off of the top rope. Then there was a triple jump into a springboard. This was with Rey on the table on the floor, And the triple jump led to Sabu hitting a DDT to Ray through the table. Ray looked like he was dead. This was an incredibly
crazy,
dangerous finish.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Joe Pesci doctor came out and yelled that the match is off. And he stopped it to lots of boos and chants of bullshit, which you cannot say you could not have expected here. This was clearly what this was designed to get out of the crowd. There was no way this audience was accepting a no contest.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. This EMT, wow, what the biggest overactor in fake EMT history, I would say. He just looks at the Sabu.
Both these guys worked really hard. Funny. And I mean, this
absolutely
match was...
Totally. I think it was just so interesting for me to see Rey Mysterio take these chair shots because, to me, like, Rey Mysterio is like the epitome of a graceful performer. Everything he does is almost perfect. And he's wrestling this guy, Sabu, who's like, you know, whose whole shtick is that he's completely fearless and at times, like, most of the time, really reckless, you know? So to see Rey take these chair shots to the head, it was kind of uncomfortable. But this was very entertaining for what it was.
We go to a video package for our upcoming tag match with Mick Foley and Edge taking on Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer. And it featured Mick Foley's heel turn at this point, where he joined Edge after they had their WrestleMania 22 street fight. And this included a promo from Paul Heyman calling Mick Foley a prostitute for prostituting his name, his legacy. But he won't allow Mick Foley to prostitute the term hardcore, as Foley and Edge had deemed themselves the co-holders of the hardcore title.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what this led to. Foley comes out first, and he says, "You're right, I did sell out. I sold out Madison Square Garden." And he says, "I used to love ECW when it was led by a creative genius and a visionary, Stephanie McMahon." And he says, "Long live the Alliance."
Yeah.
Great, great promo.
Yeah,
here.
Really funny.
Edge then comes out and he cuts a promo on the fans treating this event like it's their Christmas, but their Santa is fat and Jewish and full of shit. And that tonight, all these fans are going to go home, they're going to text their imaginary girlfriends about what a great show this was, and then pleasure themselves online while looking at pictures of his real girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And Lita just stood there and nodded. Yes. Teenagers will masturbate thinking about me.
Yes.
She was very proud. And then Lita cut a promo, if that's what you can call this.
God.
Where they showed a highlight from the ECW special this week where Dreamer was about to give her a powerbomb, but then Edge speared Dreamer, and it ended with Edge on top of Dreamer and Lita sitting on Dreamer's face, which was as dirty as it sounds. And Lita says that when she sat on Dreamer's face, it was more action than the fans had had in a year. This was a horrible promo by Lita.
Yeah.
And she followed Edge and Foley, and that was bad enough, but she was just a shitzer on the stick.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get the baby faces coming out alongside Beulah McGillicuddy, the wife of Tommy Dreamer. And McGillicuddy says that, "The day has finally come, Lita, where the trash coming out of your mouth is worse than the trash you put in your mouth." Ouch. And she says, "Since Lita loves threesomes, why don't we make it a 3-on-3 match?" And we added the women to this match, and it's a 6-person tag. And quickly, they all made their way to the floor, brawling. Funk hit a baseball slide into a garbage can to the head of Foley. There were metal sign shots to the head. Edge pulled out a ladder. Foley and Funk wrestled down the aisle. Edge set up to spear Dreamer, but ends up taking a hip toss onto the ladder in the corner. Funk then climbs the ladder, teasing the moonsault spot from Barely Legal that we saw. But Edge tips it, and Funk lands on his hip at the age of 61.
Yeah.
This was a painful bump to watch Terry Funk take.
The way Edge tipped the ladder over, they had Foley basically like school boiling the ladder. So like Foley was crouched over at the end of the ladder and Edge tipped it over. I thought that was very funny.
Then we saw Edge and Foley pull out a barbed wire board. They drop it onto Tommy Dreamer. Then they pull it off with the barbed wire entangled onto Tommy Dreamer's clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Foley is then, the board is with barbed wire set up in the turnbuckle in the corner, and Foley is Irish whip, but stops before he hits the board. But then Funk and Dreamer deliver punches, and they put Foley through the board. Funk then has the board dropped on him, and Foley wraps barbed wire around his arm and attacks Terry Funk in the eye as the fans chant, "You sick fuck." Mm-hmm. And Funk is just selling here incredibly, yelling, "My eye, my eye."
Yeah, he was great. Oh, man. He's the greatest sympathetic babyface ever. It is so
it was incredible
easy to get behind Terry Funk, and he does a great job of selling.
And that was accentuated by the fact Terry Funk was taken to the back, and there were no boos. People were concerned, I think, about Terry Funk and his eye. And there were big chants here of "We Want Sandman," mm-hmm. who was not coming out. The heels attack Dreamer. Then Foley pulls out Socko, goes to deliver it to Dreamer, but instead hits Beulah with Socko, and Dreamer makes a big comeback, defending his wife, and then Dreamer takes Mr. Socko, and then he ends up being speared at the same time by Edge as Foley's applying the Socko hold. Edge then grabs Beulah, and he goes for the pump handle slam, but Terry Funk returns with a barbed wire baseball bat, and his head is bandaged with the blood leaking through. Mm-hmm. This looked awesome.
Yeah.
If you're into grown men bleeding, which we are.
Yeah.
So Funk then hit Edge and Foley with the bat. He tries to light the bat on fire, and time stood still here as they went to crowd shots and stalled, and then Beulah had to, like, light it with one of those things you light a candle with.
Okay.
One of those long things.
Yeah.
What do you call those? A lighter? I don't know. You know what I mean? One of those longer things.
You did a great job explaining.
All right. That's why I don't do play-by-play. Funk then hits... they finally light the barbed wire baseball bat on fire, and Funk then attacks Foley with the flaming bat.
Oh, God.
His flannel was on fire here.
Uh-huh.
And then he went off the apron through the barbed wire board. While he's on fire, the extinguishers were pulled out to put Foley out. And then Dreamer hits a DDT to Edge, and then Edge comes from behind and puts the barbed wire around Dreamer's face and pulls him down to take a back bump. Lita and Beulah have a catfight spot.
The education. Or is it the Edge-O-Matic?
There was no way Styles was calling it that, and he didn't. Dreamer then hits the Dreamer driver to Lita. Edge comes back and attacks Dreamer and spears Beulah, and... Somehow in all of this, Terry Funk had been taken out and was selling with Foley. Did you catch?
Was he not taken out from the board? I think
he was lying on the board, but it was like he knocked Foley off the apron with the bat, and somehow he was bumped off the apron too.
Yeah, I forget.
I just didn't see it.
I forget. I think he was bumped off the apron onto the board along with Foley. Yeah. That's what happened. Foley dropped onto the board, and then Funk was tossed off the apron onto the board as well.
So Edge spears and just murders Beulah McGillicuddy mm-hmm. with the spear, and then pins her with her legs.
What do you call that position? What do you call that?
Suggestive.
Okay.
What I want to know is...
There's a term for it, I'm sure.
What I want to know is who suggested that as the pinning combination?
What do you mean? Well, I'm sure that's his character. That's their character.
I think Edge just said, "Hey, Tommy, do you mind if I do this to your wife?
Yeah, of
if
course.
If I dry hump her to finish
Hold on, but that's the gimmick. He
fucks women.
He's the rated R superstar. He puts them into sexual holds.
Yeah. Against their will.
Yes. I'm not even...
That's what R stands for.
Yeah.
Rape.
I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not, but yeah, that is exactly the point.
All right. No, I'm not. I'm just saying. Just picture these guys going over this match and how that comes up.
Oh, they'll do anything.
Maybe
for
Dreamer
heat.
Suggested it.
Sure. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. They'll do. I mean, it's for heat.
Everyone was selling after the match. An awesome visual, Funk with the bandage, and this match was. I thought it came across pretty well. There was a lot of people didn't think Foley could pull off being heel. He did. I know Terry Funk. They had, Mick Foley's talked about it in his third book about the big plans they had for this. And Terry Funk came out on Raw to do a promo. And when he walked out, he stumbled, kind of like he did in Beyond the Mat. And right then, Vince McMahon lost all faith in Terry Funk.
Hmm.
And it was like battling Vince McMahon here for Foley and Edge and Dreamer and Funk to get this match to what they wanted. But they had some big plans here. We'll ask Lagana more about that. He can speak better to it than I can.
Well, just speaking for the match itself, it was a really good match. I really enjoyed this. The There were a lot of crazy spots, but the crazy spots were all used to tell a story. Everybody's timing with their things were really good. Everybody involved in this match was really good. I really enjoyed this.
The fans got what they want here. And mm-hmm. Foley was such a great heel in this match, as was Edge.
Yeah.
Really good. They show John Cena backstage with the WWE title. And then Rob Van Dam is seen shadow boxing in the basement somewhere of the Hammerstein Ballroom. And then we go to our next match. Balls Mahoney and Masato Tanaka. And Tanaka was brought back. He had that huge match with Mike Awesome at the show the prior year. And early on, you see Tanaka here with his right shoulder taped up. I've always worried about this guy. Because this guy took a lot of damage in his career and still working to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Taz brings up Mike Awesome wrestling Tanaka from last year and kind of prods Joey. And you could tell Joey did not want to bring this up. And you could tell he somewhat regretted his burial of Mike Awesome last year and mm-hmm. was not going to go into it. But for those that missed it, Styles went to town on Mike Awesome. And I would argue took away significantly from their match.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought Tanaka and Awesome might have had the best match on the card last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Styles didn't give a fuck about the match. He just put over Mike Awesome being a Judas. And
oh, he wished that he would kill himself.
Which would be a very regrettable term,
yes,
for Styles in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure he feels that way.
Tanaka hits a pescado down to the floor, but lands underneath Mahoney, who delivers these shots. Mahoney gets a beer from the crowd, takes a sip, and then throws it at Tanaka. Then Tanaka does the same with a beer. They come back into the ring. They exchange superplexes, dueling chair spot, and then finishes with Tanaka taking, you guessed it, a unprotected chair shot to the head. At least it was only one.
Yeah.
And not like 10 like last year.
At least it was only one unprotected chair shot.
And Mahoney gets the victory.
Yeah. You know, he's probably very grateful that, or maybe he's not. I don't know. Tanaka seems like the type that you know, really, really wants to do a good match and willing to take those extra 9 chair shots to have a good match. So maybe he was disappointed that he didn't in this one. But, this was okay. It was really forgettable because it was only one chair shot and not 10.
One of the things I enjoyed on this show were these X-Men video game ads that Paul Heyman did the voice for.
Mm-hmm.
I just found them entertaining. Paul Heyman doing any advertisements are fun.
Yeah. He voiced the original ECW promos too, didn't he?
Yes. We get a video package for Cena and RVD, which is our main event. They recap the Money in the Bank ladder match at WrestleMania. Yeah. What?
I wrote down something at the end of this video package.
Okay. Well, you save that line
okay.
for the end. And Van Dam announces in advance that he wants his title shot at One Night Stand. The only time that the Money in the Bank has been announced ahead of time to be cashed in.
Mm-hmm.
And Cena ends it by saying, you have pissed off the wrong fire-breathing son of a bitch.
That's what I wrote down. Oh, he's so funny. Like on a show.
The least intimidating person ever.
On a show where we've heard the audience chant, you suck dick, and
she's a crack whore.
Yeah, all that stuff.
You sick fuck.
You get a line like, you've pissed off the wrong fire-breathing son of a bitch.
They probably had an idea for a character here who breathed fire.
Yes.
Before the match, Eugene comes out, and he says his Uncle Eric always used to say he was as smart as an ECW fan, taking it as a compliment. And he starts chanting, I'm hardcore. He then has a poem that he reads, and the fans are chanting. The best line was the fans chanting, shut the fuck up, and he looks all upset and looks at the crowd, why? Why should I shut the fuck up? Like he wanted to debate this chant before it was actualized.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I thought Eugene was really good.
He was really good in this role, coming out as the lame WWE babyface. Yeah.
What this was a very good heel promo.
Yeah.
This is what he cut.
For this audience. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And
I've always thought he did a really good job at his character. It's just
I just thought he had a shelf
life.
You can
only go so far.
It was a 6-month character that turned into like a 3-4 year character.
Mm-hmm.
It was way too long.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all designed for the Sandman to come through the crowd, drinking beer, smoking a cigarette.
Was there no Metallica even in the original?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And beat up Eugene with a kendo stick. And afterwards. I was, you know, I understood they were given a lot of freedom to, for commentary, but you had Styles and Taz joke that Eugene was sent back on the bus. And in case you didn't get the reference, Taz then said, the small yellow bus.
Yeah. So what?
Why don't we just make fun of a handicapped guy who just got attacked here?
Hold on a second, John. That's the character. That's if you have a problem with that line, then you have a problem with the character in general. How can you criticize that one line? Taz was simply emphasizing what this he didn't add anything. The character itself is insulting.
The Eugene character, though, as much as well,
he's a I'm not going to
What
say
is
it.
He? That's not an acceptable term. Let's move on.
I don't want to insult
I'm
you.
More offended
I would
now by
say
you
it, but
than
I don't Taz. I don't care.
Rob well, Van Dam comes out to the WWE entrance music and his pyro. Gets a great reaction despite the WWE entrance and chants.
Does he get
the whole fucking
get a great
show.
Reaction?
Oh, I thought he
got oh, pretty... sorry. I thought you were talking about Cena. Never mind.
No, Van Dam. Cena's music unanimously booed.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome spot at the beginning where Cena keeps tossing his shirt out and it's continually sent back in. When mm-hmm. they announce his name, instead of streamers, they threw toilet paper at him.
That was great.
This was awesome.
And they spent like a good 3-4 minutes just tossing the shirt back and forth. And I think, you know, you really have to give it up to the people inside the ring, especially Cena, for playing it up because they sensed that this was a special moment and they milked it. And I thought that was a very memorable
part. To Cena's
part.
Credit, like, he played to
Absolutely.
This perfectly.
Yep.
And I remember, like, people would say, oh, Cena must be so pissed. Are you kidding me? How many heels have had the opportunity to be this hated?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Think of the heat in this building. I can't remember the last time a WWE heel was so hated here.
Or a babyface loved as much as Rob Van Dam or even Kurt Angle
but
in that earlier
this was incredible
match.
Here.
These rabid ECW fans here tonight at One Night Stand. As much as they're supporting RVD, oh man, wait till Cena comes out.
This is probably, these two guys, one of their highlights of their careers was this night at the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Sure.
To think that John Cena would have been anything but ecstatic here, it would be insane. There were chants of, you can't wrestle, as Cena started on offense. Just as I noted right now, I just said, just such a distinct babyface and heel. It was mm-hmm. just made it so, like every move they reacted to.
Yeah.
This was like every wrestler's dream audience.
Yep.
Cena hit a clothesline to RVD over the top. And that led to a chant of same old shit.
Mm-hmm.
There was a corkscrew leg drop off the apron to Cena delivered by RVD. Then they fought into the audience, which all credit to John Cena for going to fight into the audience.
Yeah.
Then we saw a rolling thunder onto a chair on Cena back in the ring. RVD goes for a springboard moonsault, but Cena gets the chair up, and then Cena got the heat. RVD takes a slingshot into the chair, which is lodged into the turnbuckle.
Mm-hmm.
Then a suplex by Cena. He goes and hits the five-knuckle shuffle. Knew exactly what he was doing here. RVD then stops Cena, gets up to the top rope, but then he's tossed down by Cena again. Cena takes a drop kick off the apron. Then RVD brings out a table. Cena locks in the STFU, but RVD reaches the ropes, which didn't make sense in an Extreme Rules match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No DQ.
Is that right? Were there no other submissions on this show?
The Taz mission, but...
Yeah, it doesn't. But anyway. Well, how did they handle it in ECW?
I can't remember rope break
there
spots.
Okay.
There was a shoving spot between Cena and referee John Finnegan, and then Cena decks the referee and takes him out. Cena then hits RVD with the steel steps.
Complete heel move,
oh,
by
yeah,
the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
They weren't even trying. I don't think they went into this with anything but the expectation Cena was going to be the most hated man in this
right.
arena.
I think they had to be careful, though, because they had to portray him as a heel in this scenario. But to the people watching at home, especially the John Cena fans that are watching at home, I think they had to somehow play it so that they could justify him doing these things. You know, like remaining a babyface but in heel territory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think for this, they knew what this audience wanted and figured the people watching this do not care for John Cena, and I think they were less concerned about it. But you could definitely, like, you would never have done this spot on Raw where he shoves a referee or something like that. I think they treated this show as almost an island.
Yeah, but I do think they had to, you know, be mindful of the 8-year-old child watching at home, though.
I don't think they expected 8-year-olds to be watching this show.
I wouldn't say so. I mean, the way they promoted this, they promoted it like any other WWE pay-per-view, expecting to get that larger audience.
After he hit Van Damme with the steps, Nick Patrick ran in to count two. This again made no sense, as we had the Raw champion against the ECW guy and the SmackDown ref runs in. Mm-hmm. Which was brought up by the commentators. Yeah.
There's a fuck Nick Patrick chant.
Awesome. Cena then hits the AA to RVD.
No, it was the FU.
Back then it was the FU.
Yeah.
Sends RVD to the floor. And then Edge shows up wearing a motorcycle helmet and spears Cena through a table. Gets a babyface reaction. And they then explain Edge is the number one contender for Cena's title. The fans chant, thank you, Edge.
Yeah.
So already, you've got a babyface reaction for your top heel, and this makes no sense. Why, if he has a title match with John Cena, would he cost Cena the title?
Yes. And why, if he was just going to take his mask off anyway, did he come out in a motorcycle helmet?
Why hide it?
Yeah. Why come out dressed up?
And where did he get a motorcycle helmet from?
I don't know if they were... they must have been paying a tribute to that... that Rick Rude thing?
With Brian Lee?
I guess so.
Maybe.
But to me, it made little sense.
The psychology of this was completely backwards for me. Unless this was to say that maybe Edge would get a shot against Van Damme and he felt Van Damme was an easier opponent than Cena.
Okay, maybe he hates Cena more than he wants the title.
Sure. RVD hits the 5-star frog splash. Nick Patrick is out cold. Paul Heyman comes out. He counts three. And I don't know. I just didn't... The pop wasn't what I expected, because I think all the fans expected this to be a dusty finish with Heyman counting.
Oh, yeah.
And that they didn't believe this title change was for real. But it was.
I wouldn't say that the pop was diminished at all, though. The place went nuts. The place erupted when
really?
It went... Yeah. Yeah, at least from my viewing.
All right.
But it really was a bit of an odd finish, because it was totally illegitimate in more than one way. First of all, you had Edge come out for basically and help cheat, you know, the babyface cheat to win. And then you had a non-referee make the pinfall. So the crowd didn't care, though. They just wanted to see Van Damme win.
RVD goes to celebrate in the audience with his wife. The ECW talent is all in the ring, including Kurt Angle and Big Show, hoisting him up. And then a graphic for Vengeance comes up. And Styles notes that RVD could be defending the WWE ECW title against Edge on that show.
Yes.
So, and that's how the pay-per-view ends. A big celebration at the end. And they definitely had momentum going into that very first show.
Made me really want to watch the sci-fi show after this.
And that show, that initial show, did something like a 3.4 rating.
Wow.
Like what Raw did with The Rock coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was different because of the amount of homes they were in. But nonetheless, a huge number.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, they would be doing like a 1.2.
Yeah.
So nonetheless, this was a great start to ECW,
uh-huh.
but it would quickly diminish.
What do you give this show?
You know what? I enjoyed a lot of the wrestling on this show. I give this I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this show. I thought it was very entertaining. I give it an 8.5 out of 10. I thought it was just...
In terms of match quality, I thought it was better than last year's show. It didn't have the nostalgia feel of the show the year prior.
Yeah. I'm trying to think back, though. What did we see last year?
The Tanaka, Storm and Jericho was a good opener.
Yeah, the Tanaka awesome match was awesome.
The main event wasn't a whole lot. It was just your big street fight with the Dudleys against Dreamer and Sandman.
Sure. I still put that show as a 10, though. And this one, I think it lost points due to, in my opinion, I thought the quality of matches, not as many memorable matches on this show as the one prior, because for whatever reason, but I really enjoyed that tag team match with Foley. I thought some of the booking was questionable, but again, the crowd really made the show, much like it did last year. It's just the entire 3 hours felt very special watching this. It's rare that you just ever get an audience like this in pro wrestling, I think.
Yeah, it was incredible, the live atmosphere for this show. At this point, though, we're going to transition over. First, we're going to chat with David Lagana, who is instrumental here in the relaunch of ECW, and he'll give us some insight over all the craziness going on behind the scenes as the WWE introduced their third brand. Well, everybody, we are now joined by a guy that is quickly becoming a regular here on Review Away. We were joking that if we ever take this stock public, that we're going to have to give an equity share to this man. David Lagana, one of our favorite guests, our favorite guest here on Review Away.
Oh, thank you for at least stroking me while I'm here.
Oh, Mr. Lagana. We say it when you're not around, too. The man behind IWantWrestling.com, a guy who's even pushing a movement to get the written letter back after hearing your show. Sean Grande interview. I enjoyed it very much, and that to me was an interesting chat about letter writing.
I haven't written a letter since 1993 or 94, so I'm waiting for my letter from my friend Beth, and then once I get it, I will write one back to her. But the real injustice that I think needs to be corrected is the fact that poor Way there had a sign confiscated. It was such a big deal when Zack Ryder's sign was confiscated. There might have to be an investigative article that I write. Screw this Christian stuff and this Zack Ryder stuff. That's the biggest injustice in America right now.
I think that's the new hashtag is I Want Way. That should be the real one. We're trying to locate this this fan who had his sign confiscated. We're hopefully going to have a chat with him next Tuesday and discuss this. But apparently, WWE, they felt, we do not want you promoting anything for this Waiting 316 sign that he had brought to the Orlando taping. So I think a bigger injustice than the Christian title change. But nonetheless, we are going to now...
I understand, so...
We're now going to get into a one-night stand 2006, Dave, which I'm sure was just a completely calm and relaxing period for yourself.
It was the most calm part of my life.
Yeah, I probably, just a couple meetings a week and then, home by five each night. Let's first talk about when was the seed planted? When did you first hear about the plans to bring back ECW and in what capacity the original plans were for that brand?
I'm trying to remember, and this helped my poor brain. It had to be earlier in the year. The original concept was, we had done the first pay-per-view, and Sci-Fi had wanted a science fiction wrestling show that with The Undertaker and Kane and maybe Boogeyman, like a show just full of those characters. And I don't think they wanted to split the brand completely in three, so at some point, ECW was brought up. Originally, they were going to do the brand, launch the pay-per-view, and then do the show as a online-only show. So the idea was to do exactly how they are doing Superstars now, but to do a show that was exclusive to the internet and have it be a touring brand. And pardon me for not remembering exactly, because at that time I was still writing SmackDown.
Right.
So I wasn't in every meeting that was about ECW. But that was I remember sending a pitch to Stephanie about how to do this online show. And then remember, this is 2006. I said, what if it was like a match a day? Like, instead of having five segments, all together in one hour thing, people watch 6 minutes at a time, which nobody at the time could wrap their head around. They're like, wait a minute, but so if someone goes to attack somebody at the bottom of 1 second, the way they see it, I'm like, well, sort of, yeah. So there were a lot of interesting ideas thrown around that ended up not happening for that show.
That's really interesting, because that would have been something that I see a lot right now, specifically with various content providers online, is that I know personally for us here, I mean, we were doing the Law every Sunday, and it's just like you need to be able to be throwing stuff out at people to come back on a daily basis, whether it be blogs, whether it be shows like this, where it's bringing people back on a daily basis. And for 2006, I mean, that was a very progressive thought for the WWE at the time, who were kind of just so television oriented at the time.
Yeah, and obviously it didn't go anywhere, it is what it is. I still think it's a good idea. I think it needs the proper execution. There needs to be a way to make it feel like it's real every day. You know what I mean? They can't feel canned. And I think that was where they couldn't wrap their head around it, because they're used to producing television the same way that they have since 1997. The Monday Night Raw or Raw is War model that was created, right before or right after WrestleMania 13 has been exactly how they produced all their television shows since then. So asking them to produce anything differently, even look at how they did NXT, it's exactly the same.
Would you ever consider that, you know, a match a day concept with Ring of Honor to you know, basically put an on-demand service up there on the internet to, you know, to give the fans, you can buy a match a day, we'll give you a new match a day, and there'll be good matches that if you hear about it, come over and check it out.
Well, I think now that obviously the shift has happened with so much being available online, I think if you're going to do a concept like this, you got to do it right, and it requires a crap load of production tied into it. And right now, Ring of Honor is just, you know, is not at that place to produce the kind of content that I'm suggesting. You know what I mean? Like, you have to get the guys to be producing new content on a daily basis that is storyline driven. They have a great library that, yeah, I mean, I think one of the small weaknesses is they're not exploiting their library right now. But again, it's all capital and investment and time. And, you know, Ring of Honor does not have the production facilities that the WWE has. Mm-hmm. I'm saluted at that.
Now, going back to the initial concept for that sci-fi show, but what can you tell us more about the thought process behind doing an all sci-fi wrestling show with just outlandish characters? How would a show like that have been, you know, presented, and how would you convey that to an audience that is used to a more realistic product?
I think it was pitch only. I mean, it didn't get very far. I just remember being, it talked about, you know, being Taker and Kane and all these characters, and I think it would have been a different show. Problem is, it would have looked like Raw and SmackDown. You know what I mean? It just would have been, you know, like Malibu Stacy with a different hat, which is my new favorite thing to, my new favorite Simpsons joke to do. You know, it would have been Raw just with some spooky music and some smoke. If you ever saw the episode of, if you want an episode to review, go back and review the Monsters Ball, or not Monsters Ball, the Monster Match.
The Halloween one, right?
Yeah, that's probably what it would have ended up looking like. That's one of my favorite episodes ever, because just watching Dusty pitch it and then trying to pitch Vince the monster-related packages. He goes, wait a minute, so these packages are, why aren't they straight? Why do they have this stupid voiceover? Halloween. So, and Kevin Dunn looks at me like, I thought he approved this. I said, he did. Like, that was one of those days. I think that was the day that Tommy Dreamer came dressed as Paul Heyman, which was a nice audible to try and save the show. That's an episode that's probably what it would have looked like.
At least Vince had heard of Halloween. Which
I think he did.
I hope so. Now, in the early stages, I mean, how involved was Shane McMahon? Because it sounded like at the beginning, I mean, he had a big role in ECW coming back in this online property. I mean, how did things change there with Shane from kind of the pitch to what actualized in June?
Right, and I'm sure a ton of this will be in Paul's book when it comes out later this year, available at Amazon.com. I don't know why I'm shilling for him, but... He'll probably tell the story that Shane at one point wanted to buy ECW back in whatever year they closed, 2001, and run it. And at the time, I guess they didn't do it. So when it came around time to bring it back, Shane was obviously heavily involved. I think at one point was going to help run this too. It was going to be him and Dreamer. And again, I'm sorry if my brain is off. It's just from what I remember. But eventually he just wasn't. And when it became a TV property, when it became a sci-fi show, Dreamer and Shane were not as involved as originally supposed to be.
Now, for you, Dave, I mean, you were in a very different position because bringing back ECW, I mean, very similar to Paul. I mean, you were there at the peak of ECW, going to the shows on a regular basis in Philadelphia. What did you think about bringing ECW back? And obviously, I mean, with you and Heyman kind of in that role, I mean, that kind of gave, I think, assurances to fans that at least people that understand the product are going to be in that position assisting with the show.
Yeah, and at that time, a lot of people didn't like me. I'm sure a lot of those same people still don't like me because they thought, oh, you're the dude that's ruining wrestling. That's my favorite thing. I wish I could ruin wrestling. There are much worse people who've done a lot worse to it than me. But no, at the time, actually, I was going through a lot of bad personal stuff in my life, and I was, you know, SmackDown was overwhelming me. So at the time, Stephanie decided to switch me over to kind of help Paul with this. Some people thought I was there to stooge on him, which not really. That wasn't my job. My job actually was to make sure that Paul succeeded. And where Paul's strengths, and Paul will tell you this, where Paul's strengths were, mine weren't, and vice versa. I was, and still am, very, you know, sort of detail oriented. So, you know, if we have a pitch, I'll make sure things get done. And that's how Paul and I worked when we did SmackDown, and that's how Paul and I work whenever we do anything. And so when Paul had a, you know, when we started to put the shows together, I'd make sure that they were put together, and then he'd keep his genius moving towards whatever direction he wanted to. My job was to make sure that the studio knew stuff was, what stuff was happening in case Paul forgot. You know what I mean? Which is, no one's perfect, and everyone looks at him as a savior. You know what I mean? Everyone looks at everybody as, oh, they can do no wrong. Well, my job was there to make sure that things were taken care of. So yeah, it was good to come in and help him with this relaunch. But we learned very quickly that it wasn't going to be the original ECW.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about that, Dave? How you were planning on obviously drawing the old audience and using the nostalgia of the characters that you did bring back while also creating something entirely new. At what point did you realize that that was sort of working or wasn't working?
Well, I mean, the build-up was great. And I think the first kind of warning sign that this was going to be a little off was that, was it WWE versus ECW special? When you saw I think it was Vince saw the ECW guys and was like, ugh. It was like, I love Tony Mamaluke. We looked at Tony Mamaluke and went, what am I looking at? This is not WWE, which has been the singular problem of WWE and other brands, is he can't look at another brand and understand why it's different and why it's successful and why it's not WWE. So he looked at this rag. You go back and look at this. There you go from the WWE locker room to the ECW locker room, and there's Al Snow, there's Tommy Dreamer, there's Danny Doring. You know what I mean? Vince looks at these guys that aren't superstars in his mind. He sees wrestlers, and he can't process putting the WWE name on this brand, which it wasn't. It was ECW. And I think that was the kind of start of it. He looked at these guys that, you know, in his mind weren't what superstars, and I use that intentionally, what his superstars should look like. But it could have been kept separate differently, and the intention was to have it look different. If you remember the weekly show, the camera position was different, you know, the lighting was different. But in the end, it was, I don't think the concept was fully explained out to the new audience. And, but remember, the first show did a 2.6 rating?
It was a huge number, as I recall. Yeah, it was right in that neighborhood. Very strong start.
And they were pretty strong up and through, you know, and I'm sure we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, the whole thing just sort of fell apart when, you know, the Van Damme Sabu arrest happened.
Yeah.
And Vince completely lost faith in the whole project. You know, he was at that point, you know, he was like, I had this guy beat my hero, John Cena, and now look at what the company's gotten into. So.
So it was definitely a case. I mean, there's lots of times when we'll see the company put titles on a guy like Jack Swagger and, the better example this week, Christian, where the title's on them, but the company isn't really behind them. At that point, though, you felt like the company, they had really gotten behind Van Damme, because that main event, to me, is the moment you're going to remember from that show, is that crowd, that audience, and that celebration at the end of that show with Van Damme kind of being crowned this new star. And that was kind of the height of Van Damme in his entire run with the company.
Yeah, and he was supposed to hold the title. He did have one successful pay-per-view defense, I believe, right? He beat Edge, but again, it wasn't positioned. It wasn't that show that DX came back.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And he was positioned second or third from the top. So, you know, I don't know exactly, you know, but he wasn't supposed to hold it very much longer. But, you know, yet again, Edge, you know, when the ultimate opportunist, he was there, and that's when I think he got his second world title, you know, was in that situation. But yeah, it was, I remember being in Philly, and it was, you could just tell that the steam was out of it. And, you know, not shortly after that, Kirk got suspended. And, you know, the wheels of the brand just started to kind of shake a little bit.
Now, one of the strengths that everyone points to with the 2005 One Night Stand show is just the fact that the WWE was able to put on a pay-per-view that it was able to capture the feel of ECW. A lot of people were just amazed at what was allowed to be said on the show, and it really did feel like a different product. How did you feel that the changes were made from the 2005 to 2006 show? Was there more input from WWE on the 2006 show, or was it comparable to the initial show in 2005?
No, obviously because they were bringing it back full time, you know, Vince was a lot more invested in the matches. I remember, if you go back and watch, I think it was Balls Mahoney and Tanaka. He's like, I mean, that match was completely different than the one the year earlier.
Mike Awesome.
Completely different from the one the year earlier with Mike Awesome. So, you know, Vince is like one chair shot instead of 10. I think they ended up doing one big chair shot. You know, the discussion of what are the rules of ECW? You know, if there are no rules, how can we break the rules? You know, because again, in ECW, the original, there was never any DQs. You know what I mean? The refs just kind of let stuff happen, which Vince couldn't wrap his head around. And a lot of the upper tier talent didn't like, because why do these group of ragtag guys get to live freely on the rules inside the vehicle of WWE, and we have to live by the rules? You know, that was that these were the small problems, so that's where quote unquote extreme rules came up. You know what I mean? Where a match would be held under extreme rules, you know, where it was allowed to do that at some point. These are the small little changes.
Hello?
Didn't understand a lot of the ways Paul's booked, and it was very similar to how Vince interacts with Dusty. Is, you know, okay, you were quote unquote successful outside of here. Well, I'm going to show you why I'm successful, and you're going to do it my way. Mm-hmm. Those are the changes. Those are the differences.
Was Vince, or were people in the not involved with ECW originally, but in part of the WWE at the time, were they prepared for the reaction that that crowd provided on that night for that second One Night Stand show?
Well, I think everyone had been there the first night, and what was interesting was a lot of the, you know, creative team wasn't involved with the first pay-per-view. It was only Ed Koski, myself, and Paul. And I don't think Paul wasn't on the team at the time, so you know, everybody else kind of didn't come. So they didn't see it live. They maybe watched it on television. Most of them probably didn't watch it at all. If I know certain people on the team didn't watch it at all, because it was like, well, why do I got to watch this? Ooh, ooh, ooh. So when the second one came around, I don't remember if, like, Michael Hayes was there. I think he might have been. And I think that's the one Tommy get lit on fire? No, Tommy got lit on fire in the first one.
Foley got lit on fire on this one.
Oh, that's right, right, right. I'm trying to remember. Like, so them jumping in, you know, it became, you know, this show, again, was sort of the same thing. It was, like, I think it was pretty much all hands on deck, but I don't remember. And it was just, you know, they're looking at this wrestling that they all sort of quote unquote hated, you know, because it was different from what they were used to. And, you know, everyone has their opinion about ECW. It's positive or negative. No one's really kind of middle ground on it and on the style. So, you know, here are these very traditional WWE people trying to, you know, produce this product.
Can you talk a little bit about just the buildup leading to that second One Night Stand show, where you had just the handling of the ECW talent within the WWE audience? You know, there's a very clear duality that we see with John Cena these days that was apparent with the ECW crowd as well, where they would be heels on one side, and then when they were within their home territory, I suppose you could say, they were the you know, unanimously baby faces. How is that written, basically? How do you prepare for something like that, and how do you straddle that line?
Well, I think it depends on the talents, and Rob was in a very interesting position, you know, because Rob was the only person, I believe, Van Damme, was the only person to ever cash in Money in the Bank, not after someone had a match.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he was, I think he might have been the only babyface to do it, really. I know Punk was sort of a babyface when he did it, but he did it was very heelish. So every character was sort of different with it. I'm trying to remember, but remember we added Kurt, you know, for that pay-per-view, you know, Big Show was added. It became very WWE very quickly, you know, with who they added. So, you know, it was weird. It was very much, and I don't think it was like the invasion very quickly, but it wasn't separate. You know what I mean? It wasn't like this group of guys where they spent, you know, 8 weeks getting these talents over on WWE TV. It was here's the new ECW wrapped around Paul, and here are the guys that are going to, you know, it was the main guys like Sabu and I don't remember else. But I mean, the main event, you know, was Van Damme. It was a WWE guy. At the time when they did the invasion in 2001, Van Damme was a completely new entity. You know, since then, Van Damme has been WWE. So, you know, he brought his WWE audience over at the time. So it was like, to me, there was no like heel and baby faces with this one as much. I mean, the crowd, the scene of that night was a heel simply because that New York audience looked at him and went, screw you, we don't like you. You know what I mean? You're everything that we hated in ECW. And they lived to boo him. And that was one of my favorite John Cena performances ever, because he just accepted it and went with it.
John was great in that main event. I just thought there's a lot of top baby faces who would have, you know, got the pouty face on and not just worked with it. And I thought Cena was just incredible in that main event and kind of understood what his role was for that audience in that arena that night.
Go back and watch Batista and Big Show from that same building about a month later.
Yeah, you can have the contrast. Now, a question I've never known the answer to this was the two one-night stand shows in 2005, 2006. Did Kevin Dunn do those shows?
Yeah.
He did. Wow.
There's nothing that WWE puts up on a satellite that Kevin Dunn's not involved with.
Now, because he seems to me like he would be the biggest detractor to anything out of that formula that him and Vince have created. I mean, what was kind of his thought process and role kind of in those early shows in 2005 and at this time period as well?
Again, I'm sure Paul will have his piece on a lot of this. You know, he's a master politician. He doesn't make $1.7 million a year for not being a smart man to know how to work inside the WWE system. I made a hair shy of $1.7 million. I think I made $1.7 comparably to his $1.7 million. But, you know, Paul worked a lot on those first packages on that pay-per-view. But if you look at those packages on the first review, they were not as slick as the WWE packages that were done. You know, and it was a pay-per-view. He just looked at it as a show. I mean, this is the same man that produced Girls Gone Wild on pay-per-view. So, I mean, he'll produce anything that Vince tells him to produce. So at the time, this is what we were doing. And so, you know, they developed a different look for ECW. You know, it was all based upon what the pitch was. I mean, if you remember, the original ECW set was off to the side. I mean, it was like this Chinese fire drill after SmackDown was over to get ECW ready. Like, they moved two camera positions. You know, they brought this big curtain over to cover the SmackDown fist, which was my favorite part. And then moving the set, we had to move Gorilla. The Gorilla position was always in a cramped position because it wasn't like watch Big Show don't hit your head, or watch Rey Mysterio don't hit your head, because it was like you had to duck under this thing. You know, every place was different, and it was just this Chinese fire drill, you know, at every show. You know, they tried to make the show look different, and, you know, Kevin may have not liked everything that Paul was doing because they didn't like each other. I think one day there'll be a match.
Well, it'll make for a great book later this fall, yes, which everyone is anticipating. Well, Dave, I want to thank you very, very much for coming on. As always, I mean, to give us just some incredible insight into some of these events we chat about. But I definitely want to ask you about what is coming up soon on IWantWrestling.com, because it seems every week you've got just tons of content coming out. It's one of my favorite bookmarks.
Yes. Well, I have no scoops, but I actually have a giant interview that I just finished with MVP. It's probably, I know he's done a few here and there, but it's probably the most open and honest interview or discussion. You know, I just talked to him, and you know, he talks about, you know, what it was like in jail.
Wow.
You know, why he left WWE, you know, the entire Benoit relationship he had, which I don't think a lot of people really knew. I didn't really know all of it, and I worked there, but you know, how incredibly close they were, and his thoughts on everything. You know, what was his reason for, you know, being not pushed anymore, or what he believes it, and kind of what it was like to be in Japan during the earthquake. I mean, it's 90 minutes. I was only hoping to do 45. We ended up doing 90, so it'll be split into two parts over the next week or so. As he talks about his New Japan shows that are happening in the U.S. this coming week. So.
Awesome stuff. Well, we will direct you over to iwantwrestling.com, and for sure we will have a link up on the site when that interview goes up. A must listen to with Dave Lagana and MVP. So, Dave, thanks as always for taking some time to chat with us. We really appreciate it, and we'll chat with you soon in the future.
Thank you, gentlemen.
So, it's always a good time to chat with David Lagana. He added quite a lot of insight, I found.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
At this time, Wei, we're also going to throw in a little bonus chat here because I wanted to play some of our comments from Paul Heyman when we interviewed him. This was just months after this one-night stand and the weekend before December to Dismember. So let's get Heyman's thoughts on this revival of ECW and what his thoughts were going into this entire time period.
Well, one of the key things that you did manage to do, and you talked about it for that first ECW pay-per-view, that was an absolutely incredible show, but a lot of it was the hardcores coming back and based on nostalgia. Do you think you've lost that at this point with the new ECW?
Oh, I think the original ECW fan base is if not gone, has certainly dwindled down considerably. And I understand why. This is not the product that they wanted. This is not the product that they were looking forward to seeing. This is not the reunion and the taking up where we left off that they were hoping and praying and clamoring for. This is a distinctly different product, geared towards a distinctly different audience, and it's not going to appeal to the original fan base, and I understand their concerns, and I understand why they're not turned on by the new product. It's a different product than what they were hoping for.
And how do you feel about that? I mean, you're the person that's directly responsible for conjuring up that original fan base, and now you've lost them with what is can be termed, you know, your new creation.
It's not my company anymore.
Okay.
I don't own it, and I'm not the final say-so in creative. I liken this to any other television show. You know, The West Wing had a rabid fan base when Aaron Sorkin, who by the way is also from Scarsdale, New York, must be in the water. When Aaron Sorkin was the showrunner and the creator and the lead writer and executive producer, when he took a step back for a year, and then other people came in, it was a different show. When he came back, he had to pick up where the new storylines had gone, and it was a different feel to the show, and it appealed to some new people, and it turned off some of the old people. The same thing happened on Dallas back in the 80s when Leonard Katzman left the show for a while. This is not Paul Heyman's vision for ECW. This is Vince McMahon's and WWE's vision for ECW, with Paul Heyman saying, hey, let's take it down this road in your way. Hey, if you want to go in that direction, here's an authentic ECW flavor to that concept. It's not going to be what I had it back in the 90s. It's clear that it's not going to be. But there's no way for me to make it that way. I can sit here and argue my head off. It's not going to be the same as it was. So then the choice becomes, does Paul Heyman pull out and say, screw you, this is not the ECW that I love, that was my religion, that was my life, and I don't want any part of this, and walk away, and it's going to move on without me anyway? Or does Paul Heyman stay involved and say, well, if you're going to do it this way, at least let's try it in this fashion, or let's go down this avenue? You can't have input from the outside. The only input you can have is from the inside. So I would dare suggest that if I wasn't involved, it would be even more dramatically different than the old days or the old concepts, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you've obviously made the choice to stay on in. And are you sitting there and are you happy with what you're seeing and what you're doing right now?
Am I happy?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, was I happy back in 1999 when the company was crashing? Yeah, it's like any other business. You have your good days and your bad days. I get a lot of inspiration from a guy named Jimmy Iovine. Jimmy Iovine is the most prolific producer in music, and he is the co-chairman of the Universal Music Group with Doug Morris. Jimmy is the creator of Interscope Records, and has sold and bought his company back several times, and he finally landed it with Universal Music. And I always ask him, is it the same as when Interscope was purely yours, your decision at the end of the day, you live and die by your own decisions, and you accept both the credit and the blame for these things? Or is it easier now when you get to sign off on it, and it's more of a corporate involvement with your input? And he'll sit there and say the same thing. I had good days and bad days with the first way. I have good days and bad days with the second way. There are a lot of things that we do now that I don't agree with. There's a lot of things that we do now that could never have happened in the original ECW because we didn't have the resources or the platform. I mean, look at the bright side of it. We're on primetime television. We are walking into an age now of not only the internet, but of mobile communications, which I would venture that ECW is going to blow Raw and SmackDown away on those avenues. We are looking at a totally different entertainment industry in the next 2 years than it ever has been before. Now, if we're on board for that, then we can once again blaze a trail. We can once again demonstrate to everybody how cutting edge we are, how ahead of Raw and SmackDown we are, because the people involved in ECW right now are very progressive thinkers. If we're looking at it purely from a wrestling standpoint, happiness is a relative term. I look at it from a much more of an ECW as a unique platform standpoint.
So by saying that ECW will be the one to really grab hold of mobile communication and be successful there, are you telling me you're under the impression that the fans that are watching ECW are completely different from the Raw and SmackDown fans?
I'm saying that the people involved in ECW right now are far more progressive thinkers than the people on Raw or SmackDown, and that as we are pitching different ideas throughout this corporate structure, we're looking more towards the unique platforms that are offered in terms of entertainment in the next 24 months. Back in 2001, I was screaming in WWE, hey, on-demand is the future. On-demand is the future. You know, live pay-per-view is wonderful, but my God, on-demand is such a cash cow. We need to be getting into that now ahead of the pack. And this was 2 years before on-demand really hit. We're lucky in ECW is in that the people that are involved in my staff are very savvy in terms of technology, very savvy in terms of where the entertainment platforms are headed right now. And I would say that this is not a strength of the Raw and SmackDown teams right now. So the things that we're pitching, besides just the wrestling product is what I'm talking about, the things that we're pitching are all progressive, are all looking towards the next 12 to 24 months and where entertainment is headed. And the things that Raw and SmackDown are pitching are based on the pay-per-view industry and the landscape as you know it now.
Do you think that fans have trouble distinguishing the Raw versus SmackDown versus ECW? I mean, the brand splits were put in place, but one of the problems I find is that the wrestlers are just moving back from brand to brand and everyone's on everyone else's show, and therefore you're not getting a distinct product. Don't you think that it would be better for ECW to, you know, definitely stay distinct, try to have a different look, kind of keep your guys on your show and away from the other shows?
Yes, but there's a big asterisk involved in that. When we first put the title on the Big Show, then we didn't have enough people on the show for the Big Show to run through and the Big Show to have title matches with and the Big Show to have television matches with without burning through our entire crew in 2 months. So we needed to have Ric Flair and The Undertaker and Kane and Batista and everybody else come over to ECW to challenge the Big Show. Otherwise, we would have had a decimated crew, even more decimated than we ended up with anyway, within 2 months. That being said, I do think that the brand extension and the separation of Raw from SmackDown from ECW has been terribly watered down, and a decision will have to be made sooner than later as to whether people become brand exclusive again, which I'm very much in favor of, or we just throw this whole thing out the window and it becomes just anarchy again. I would hope that we go to brand specific, because I think once you do that, you can build a loyalty amongst an audience, whether it's a Raw loyalty or a SmackDown loyalty or an ECW loyalty. I look at, for example, Kendrick in London, and I'd love to have them on ECW,
right?
But that hurts SmackDown, in my opinion. You know, and the same thing for CM Punk. I bet you Raw and SmackDown are salivating to have CM Punk on their show, but as soon as that happens, you're watering down his involvement in ECW.
One of the trends that's going on right now in pay-per-view is UFC pay-per-views, taking over WWE's business and going over top of them. You're one of the few in the wrestling industry who seems to have embraced and spoken openly about MMA and the integration with professional wrestling. Where do you see these two cultures coming together or separating as we move down the wrestling and MMA line?
Well, it's the old thing of where they are weak, we are strong, and when we are weak, they are strong. I think the next logical step in professional wrestling is a more realistic style, is a more big event atmosphere to the quote-unquote fights. I also think that's why Brock Lesnar hit so fast, so hard in 2002, besides the fact that he had a great agent standing next to him. I also think that's why Kurt Angle started really taking off again before he ran into his myriad of problems here in WWE. I think if you look at where the style of professional wrestling is headed in the next few years, I think it's a far more realistic MMA type of style. On the flip side, with the exception of Tito Ortiz, who does well for himself, not only as a personality, the Huntington Beach bad boy, mm-hmm. but also, you know, by doing talk shows with his girlfriend Jenna Jameson, which is very high profile. And also Forrest Griffin, who just comes off like, you know, the toughest son of a bitch in MMA because he can take such punishment and you always know you're going to get a down and dirty slug out with Forrest Griffin. With those two exceptions, and maybe a Chuck Liddell, you don't have the larger-than-life personalities. And it actually started that way. I mean, if you think back to the Tank Abbotts and the Chemos, I mean, Chemo was just a sensation for a while in MMA. And you think back to the larger-than-life personalities, I think MMA needs to start defining who these people are. And that's what professional wrestling has always done so well when it's done right, is that you know who these guys are. You know who John Cena is. You know who The Big Show is. You know who DX are. You know who King Booker is. You know who these personalities are. And if you have an emotional investment into the persona, then it means more when they're in a big match. The same way for MMA. The scariest thing to me about MMA's numbers is that if you look at their TV ratings, they're not a TV bonanza. They're really not.
No, you're right.
They are a pay-per-view bonanza. So, obviously, they're drawing from their television viewership, far more people will buy their pay-per-view. A higher percentage of their audience buys into their product than almost anything else that's available today. Probably far more than wrestling, probably far more than boxing. Once they start to understand how to market these personas and how they can develop these personas in a realistic world. I mean, look at Mayweather. Boxing has done a great job with Mayweather because you know who this guy is. You understand who this guy is. You understood who Arturo Gatti was. So boxing has Mayweather. MMA, if they can define anybody as well as boxing has defined Mayweather, or as well as WWE or Raw or SmackDown or ECW define their personas, then imagine how many more people will be turned on to their product. And I think at that time, then they become potentially the kings of pay-per-view on not only a United States and North American basis, but on a worldwide basis as well. And at that point, hopefully, wrestling will be still ahead of the curve by having a more realistic style. Where they're weak, we're strong. Where we are weak, they're very strong.
Now, Paul, I'm pretty much close to the end of the interview, and I appreciate you taking the time out. Just a couple more questions. In regards to the initial plans for ECW, when the brand was created, when you guys got up and going, he had RVD with two belts on his shoulder. Then you had the arrest of Rob Van Dam and Sabu. The title was taken off RVD immediately, and suddenly the promotion was built around Big Show. How much were your initial plans just completely thrown out the window?
100%. But I don't think, you know, it's there's an old thing about a blessing in disguise. And I think Big Show brought a lot to the table for us. And I think Big Show brought a lot more than most people ever give him credit for. Big Show creates a lot of attention. and he brings a lot of eyes with him. And because Big Show was champion, we had Undertaker and Kane and Batista and Ric Flair and all these other people coming on to ECW for the very first time and vying for the ECW world title. We also had a chance to get then Big Show in the ring with Sabu, Van Damme, and Sandman, and all the other ECW guys. Big Show brought an extremely high-profile champion to the table for ECW. Was it the original vision when Rob Van Dam was champion? Absolutely not. Did we benefit from our experience with Big Show as champion? I think absolutely. And the funniest thing is, if you think back to where we were on July 4th, which is when the title changed from Rob Van Dam to the Big Show, I think it's been a real blessing that Big Show has been our champion. And I think he's brought a lot to the table. And I think that he's been an exemplary champion. And I know in the locker room, he has certainly been a tremendous motivating factor to a lot of our guys. I mean, here was a guy that had no reason to be going through tables and doing all these things that he was doing, and yet he was doing it every night because he loved the fact that he was the ECW world champion. I think Big Show was a clear demonstration that no matter what you've done on other brands, you step into an ECW ring and you work your ass off, you're going to make an impact. And that's exactly what he did. I have no regrets with Big Show having this run as the ECW world champion. I'm very proud of him. I'm very proud of Paul White as a human being, and I think he's done a miraculous job, and I'm honored by the fact that he worked his ass off so hard in the name of the ECW title.
So, Way, we've heard from David Lagana, we've heard from Paul Heyman, and now we want to hear from the people and what they thought of One Night Stand 2006. Should they have chosen to go back and watch? And we'll start off with Mark Sherman. I was so hyped for ECW to come back, and I thought this was just the beginning. Boy, was I wrong. Must say, the thing I miss most about ECW is the crowd. Dean Vandergrind, our SmackDown reporter. Sorry, our Impact reporter. I really enjoyed this pay-per-view. It wasn't as good as the first One Night Stand, though. The nostalgia really wasn't there this time around, because it had already been done the previous year. I really liked the build, though, and I thought most of the matches delivered in the ring. It was a bold move for Vince to book his own homegrown talent on this show and have them portrayed in a negative light. It was specifically noticeable for the Orton Angle match, which, to its credit, was a great match, but not one that anybody wanted to see because it had nothing to do with ECW.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had this argument earlier. I mean, this was not a nostalgia show. This was about relaunching a brand, and I didn't have the same problems you did with Kurt Angle, but fair enough. I can understand where people are coming from.
Yes. Steve Kassan really enjoyed this pay-per-view. Yes, it did not have that amazing feeling from the first one, but what this got right was that it didn't host any of the WWE stars in the balcony, which I thought hurt it. Strictly kept in the ring without any outside involvement. And that Cena-RBD match, wow, the crowd made that match memorable. Also, Edge appearing with a motorcycle helmet. Great!
Great? Really?
Oh, I guess because of the reference. I liked the WWE stars in the balcony in the first one, though. Initially, going into it, didn't think it would be anything great, but it ended up making a very good ending to the show.
And it provided that super entertaining Heyman promo.
Yeah.
So
it provided a lot of great promos. It basically provided a heel group for the ECW people to rally against.
Mark Cardoso, I remember the 2006 version of One Night Stand being heavily influenced by the WWE and the major disappointment of Randy Orton being Kurt's 4-6 or 8-sided ring challenger. But the memorable moments of the show had to be Kurt giving Randy Orton headlocks and then swatting him off and then out-wrestling him to the crowd's delight with chance of Angle's gonna kill you as a knockoff to Samoa Joe in TNA. Also, when John Cena threw his shirt into the crowd and having the fans throw it back and even going so far as spitting on it and wiping their ass on it before tossing it back.
Pete Krasilka, I for one will never forget Terry Funk backstage screaming about his eye. That right there is how you sell a match. Concerned about your future health and well-being. Cena should take notes.
Shane Theverge, very good show from what I remembered. The crowd really looked like they were going to riot if Cena won. Only downside of the show was that WWE had more input to it, unlike the year before. Perfect example, the appearance of Eugene. I thought the Eugene thing worked great for Sandman to come out and just destroy him. I had no problem with that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it was fine. But it depends really what you're looking for, because if, like I said, if you only saw the one-night stand from the year prior, or if you're thinking you're going to get the one-night stand from year prior, you would have been disappointed with any involvement from WWE characters. Shane, The Verge.
That's one we just read.
Eric Creamer. Without a doubt, one-night stand 06 is the best event to chant along with in a long time. The usual "you can't wrestle" chants, along with the same old shit chants, were dwarfed by the chants pertaining to semen consumption. However, this show is a sign that the old ECW was definitely a thing of the past. Instead of sticking to matches that exclusively featured ECW talent, we had WWE stars all throughout the event. I don't care how much Angle represented ECW in the weeks leading up to the show, he wasn't ECW. Hell, his promo from the previous one-night stand should have had him booed out of the building this time. But instead, he was cheered like a good little WWE audience. All that being said, I enjoyed the show overall. And the "If Cena wins, we riot" sign was, pure genius. I also loved the black guy who was flipping off Cena after throwing the shirt back at him. Can't wait to hear your review of the show. And that's it.
Jordan Ducharme. I think comparing it to the previous year is a tough call to show is tough to call the show a success. It's clear the people in charge of putting it together weren't allowed to have free reign like the year before, and I really do believe that took away from the show. That being said, as a standalone show, there's little to complain about. The tag match was excellent. Cena RVD was maybe the most dramatic match I've ever seen, and Sabu Ray was ridiculous but good. It's one of the only shows I'm simultaneously in love with and deeply disappointed with.
Mm-hmm. Mike Still, great job on UFC 1. Like a lot of your fans, I'm not a big MMA watcher, but I've got to give credit to your review. Like your Super J Cup review, this was one of the few reviews you've done of a show I haven't seen and knew only a few of the participants. You really managed to help me visualize what it would be like watching the show and sprinkled enough facts and wrestling tie-ins to keep it interesting. Since it seems the group is clamoring for more WWECW, you guys should review either the first episode of the ECW series on Sci-Fi with the debut of the Zombie, and or the SmackDown vs. Raw vs. ECW special that was on the week before One Night Stand. Maybe we will review one of those WWECW episodes.
Maybe we should try and get the Zombie on the show.
Mm. Yeah.
Steve Orlowski. One Night Stand was a great show, but you could see that it was just a matter of time before the arrogance of WWE would be seen. The first sign of that was the finish of the Sabu Mysterio match, a doctor stoppage after one table spot on the floor. There was a lot of good on the show. Kurt Angle working a stiff ground style was awesome. The six-person tag match provided the violence with an awesome finish, and the whole atmosphere of the main event made it an unforgettable night. I think of what could have been if they would have stayed more true to the original ECW, not as far as the violence, but with all the matches having actual finishes and letting the wrestling sell the show. I look forward to the review. I hope I didn't spoil anything for anyone.
Ron E. Bosch. After the first one-night stand, I was very excited for the second. Although there were a shitload of WWE guys, it was a great event. The Sabu Mysterio ending was awesome. The tag team match was one of the most brutal matches I've ever seen in the WWE, and the main event was highlighted by the fans. Seeing the shirt thrown back at Cena was classic, but for me the highlight was running over to the Hammerstein Ballroom after the event, which was a half hour away, to see the superstars leave. My best friend and I got pictures with Trinity, Eugene, and Sabu, which I will post to the group's page. Overall, a decent show, but nothing compared to the original.
That's very cool. We actually got a few comments from people who were at the show.
Mm-hmm.
Ciaran Highland, enjoyed the UFC 1 review, guys. Crazy how the sport and presentation has evolved. Anyway, I really enjoyed One Night Stand 2006. The rabid crowd and venue really added to the show. The main event wrestling-wise was nothing special like Rock Hogan, but the crowd made it into something truly memorable. I think Cena played his role as subtle heel brilliantly. The throwing back of the t-shirt was such an awesome touch. I still remember before the main event the shot of Cena in the back with the WWE title looking solemn. It really stuck with me for some reason. Orton versus Angle reminded me how charismatic Orton could be, whereas these days he's just boring as hell. The mixed tag match was just insane, not something we'll be seeing any day soon in WWE this day. I presume Edge was laying out Beulah in some sort of mock sex position when the camera cut away when he was alone with her in the ring. Oh, and Balls Mahoney versus Masato Tanaka. What else did Balls Mahoney do in his career besides hit people with chairs?
Anthony Salemi, to those comparing the one-night stand from 2005 to this one, I'd hate to say it, but they cannot compare. The first show was simply there to give the fans something back. The second show was used as a vehicle to promote the new ECW and finally give RVD his title run.
Paul Greinke. One thing I really liked about One Night Stand is that Money in the Bank was actually used to, heaven forbid, sell a pay-per-view and elevate a mid-card talent to the main event without looking like a fluke win. Van Damme was the only person who used a briefcase ahead of time to demand a match on his terms. I have no idea why WWE doesn't do it more often. Say Christian wins the briefcase this year and demands a match at TLC because it's his specialty. This show really did elevate Van Damme. I mean, he was, you know, their top guy for like a month till he had his whole arrest with Sabu. And
sure,
he was never the same after that. But yeah, for this month, I mean, he was the guy.
But I wouldn't say that this was not a fluke win, though. This was not a clean victory for Van Damme. They didn't really put him over as somebody who could beat John Cena.
I don't know about that.
He had interference. Wow. He didn't even have a referee count his pinfall. It was a totally illegitimate win, but it's because they took him seriously anyway that I think it worked. Kevin Waters, I liked the show, although not as much as the first One Night Stand. Like others have pointed out, you could see the WWE way of booking bleeding through, like Big Show celebrating with the ECW guys at the end. It had some good matches. I will always prefer a heel Jerry Lawler. I thought the six-person tag was brutal, and the best match on the card, but I hate Sandman, from his 45-minute entrance to his awful in-ring stuff. There was an ECW pay-per-view of Mania on YouTube with Sabu talking about Sandman tripping on acid and saying, "Hear, lizard, lizard," while they wrestled with Sandman, screwing up everything. Thought the crowd made the show, like most ECW shows. Really enjoyed the crowd interaction with the main event.
It's always great. Dennis Amaya, I remember watching the show a couple months back and having a completely different perspective than when I first watched it a couple years back. It was very obvious that the WWE has a lot of creative control, unlike the original event. When it comes to matches, I think that this event was better. I thoroughly enjoyed the FBI Tajiri and Super Crazy tag match. I remember just being amazed at some of the spots they did. The RDV, intentional title win, was well deserved until he decided to screw it all up. I also remember being in awe of the reactions of the fans to some of the guys like Orton and Cena, as I had never really been exposed to such hostile fans or ECW in general. Despite all the negative connotations given to this event as a result of the WWE involvement, it was still a very solid show. Also, wasn't there a WWE versus ECW special that aired in the week building up to this show? Another question I have for John is, how papered, if at all, was UFC 129? Don't know if you would know this after so soon after the event. Anyway, thanks for the excellent reviews, especially the UFC, despite many people not liking it. They are always a blast to listen to. There was very little tickets that were papered, other than, you know, comps for some close people with UFC. I mean, that was a pretty, like, non-papered crowd at UFC 129. I mean, it wasn't like when the casinos buy up all the tickets, or 70% of them, at a big arena, and a lot of them are handed out. Like, this was fans attending UFC 129 and paying a lot to do so. I mean, there was a huge demand for those tickets.
Yeah. Let's go to Alex Rios. If One Night Stand 05 was the last hurrah of the original ECW, then 2006 was the beginning of what I've called from day one, the fake ECW. Granted, the show by itself was far superior than anything ever offered on Sci-Fi, though not without its flaws, such as too much WWE creative involvement, Big Show's appearance, Rey Mysterio working in his WWE style, and the Sandman not coming out to enter Sandman to truly make it feel like an ECW show. I was actually initially happy with the prospects. Rob Van Dam finally getting his long overdue title reign, defeating John Cena, who that ECW crowd legit hated. If Cena wins, we riot sign. I truly believe that if he did win, there was indeed going to be one at Hammerstein. All things considered, this was a solid show, which started the fake ECW brand with a lot of potential and steam, only to be squashed with but a whimper 4 years later.
Daniel Barrett. One Night Stand was a good show all around, but the main event match is what it's remembered for, mainly the start. I remember watching this pay-per-view live and living in the UK. That meant staying up till 4 a.m., but that also meant I forgot what time it was and got swept up in the excitement of the live crowd. Needless to say, my neighbor didn't enjoy being woken up at 3:30 because I was marking out. Anyway, I thought Sabu versus Rey was a great match with a great ending. I really bought into the end and thought, although it was a short match, the end was a good way of making them both look good. The Edge Foley Lita versus Funk Dreamer Beulah match was a little meh for me. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible either. The other tag match, however, was awesome. Having never really seen much of the original ECW and only seeing little over a year of Super Crazy on SmackDown, I thought out of the first tag match he came out looking great. I also would have liked to have seen more of Masato Tanaka after his great showing with Mike Awesome the year before, but I felt the match with Balls didn't really do that. Anyway, keep up the great work, fellas.
Sergey Gavrilyuk. I remember this show for the first, for the most amusing crowd reactions I ever heard on a wrestling show, trashing all WWE superstars in general and complete Cena burial in particular. I felt bad for Cena the first time I watched, but as the finish came, I thought he deserved every chance he got and toilet paper that was thrown at him. It would be better if they put over RVD clean.
Robert Otto. One night stand will always be remembered for the amount of heat from the crowd for John Cena. I'll never forget him coming out and just being crapped on and all the chants directed at him from start to finish. Other than that moment in the show, I only remember Terry Funk yelling, "He got me in the fucking eye," from a barbed wire bat spot and being helped to the back and feeling sad watching this old man try and work and being possibly severely injured. Keep up the great work, John and Way.
Daniel Stack. Hey guys, what's up? My vote for One Night Stand put that choice over the top, so I'm glad you two are reviewing it. Yes, I said votes. For I, Daniel Stack, may be better known to law fans in the gimmick of Biggest Fan Review Away. Ah, so Biggest Fan has a name. His name is Daniel Stack. I am shooting here, much like Hulk Hogan's horrible WCW Russo-inspired run as Terry Bollea, F-U-N-B. Okay. One Night Stand 06 was great. I actually liked it better than the first one. Edge and Foley were fantastic together. Also, the Cena-RVD match was insane. Cena handled it like a champ, if you ask me. I like this show because it mixed past ECW talent really well with the current roster, rather than having a bunch of guys in the balcony. More WWE talent actually wrestled on the show. Keep up the great work. Awesome job covering the UFC. Just got the Fight Network app on my smartphone. Peace out.
Mark O'Brien, howdy. While I think Terry Funk had the most memorable performance at the second night stand, in my opinion, Edge was the MVP and was probably at his peak during the summer of 2006. During his tag match, he put in a despicable performance, but earning enough respect from the crowd to be cheered in the main event. P.S. I now also have the Fight Network app.
Oh, good for you guys. That's great. Everybody, go out and grab the Fight Network app. It's totally free.
Do you have it?
I don't have a smartphone.
Neither
but if I did, I'd be all on that. Tells you exactly when. Well, all your updates, all of John Pollock's wrestling updates are on that thing. Did you know that?
Nope.
Okay. Jared Brodeur. Hey, guys, I was actually at this show. My friend and I decided to make the trip to New York. A cool moment happened before the show when I was checking into my hotel and standing right next to me was Rob Van Dam. Right when he looked over at me, he flipped his phone open and said, "Hello, Paul Heyman." I overheard him say, "Yeah, Vince and John are cool with it. I'm extremely cool with it." I was under the impression that they were talking about the finish of the match. As far as the show, the atmosphere was awesome all night. I was sitting next to some crazy-looking dudes who looked like they were going to kill someone. I had no doubt they had the finish. I had no doubt that had the finish not gone the way it did, there could have been a near riot. Before the show, while everyone was getting seated, a back-and-forth chant started between the floor and balcony of "Fuck you, balcony," followed by "Fuck the floor seats." The chants ended with everybody chanting "ECW." This has to be my favorite wrestling show I've ever attended due to the overwhelming crowd atmosphere and how much heat all the WWE guys got.
Matt Waters, hindsight being 2020, it should have come as no surprise that the new ECW is going to be nothing like the original. The first clue of that would have been the Battle Royal they had the week prior, where the two names standing tall for ECW were Kurt Angle and The Big Show. As for the show itself, any show where Orton and Cena are repeatedly told that they swallow can't be all bad, right? Although, to be fair, it was fun to watch both guys playing with the crowd near the end of their respective matches. Also, to see RVD, much like Christian this past week, finally get his due and win the title was great to see, despite how it ended up. And with everyone, and while everyone praises Terry Funk for his performance, deservedly so, Edge and Foley should get special mention, as according to Foley in his third book, both had spent the majority of the day in the bathroom due to illness. So the fact they were able to perform and not have a Sid moment is amazing. And finally, isn't it funny to see any member of the WWE roster calling himself the Wrestling Machine, as that certainly won't happen again anytime soon. Can't wait for the review, guys.
Why is that? I don't get that. What's the wrestling machine?
Well, they can't say wrestling anymore.
So. Oh, gotcha. John Nickel, back in 06, I had Sky Sports and I was taping all the events via my VCR. I remember taping the show and thinking that going into the show, this would be a fantastic show. The only matches I truly liked were RVD, Cena, and Edge, Foley versus Dreamer, and Funk. The rest of the matches I have forgotten. I really didn't like the Sabu versus Mysterio match, as that was cut short, and I wanted to see a true classic, only to have the match end with a no contest. I was really disappointed with the lack of invaders, as the year prior to this one was the show where Bischoff and JBL invaded. This show gave RVD a belt, which is predictable, and I also made my realization that Cena is a performer, standing there while the fans chanted, "You suck." I have never liked Cena, but I thought that this show showed how much heart he truly has.
So that's going to wrap up the feedback, a plethora of feedback to this show, eh? So I want to thank all of you for leaving that. You can, of course, leave your feedback now at facebook.com/reviewaway. Uh-huh. It's not true, way.
Yes, it is. We just launched it right now at this very moment.
Thursday at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, facebook.com/reviewaway. We want to give a very, very, very special thank you to Ahmad Butt, who spent all the time and effort to transfer every single photo from the original Facebook group over to this new one. So thank you, Ahmad, for all your help in creating this page. And
Thank you to Ahmad. We really appreciate him doing all this work for us to make things much easier. I'm hoping this fan page, people are much more receptive to it. We will all agree we hated the new group. It was a horrible week.
It sucked.
It was horrible. Like I enjoyed going on to that old group and just seeing it was all very easy to navigate through, and it was just an absolute headache. I can only pray that this group thing completely fails for Facebook and they have to readdress it, because it is not designed for anything more than a handful of people, and it's mm-hmm. just a horrible, horrible application.
Yeah. So we appreciate everybody that has that used to contribute to the old group. I mean, we've had quite the history with that thing. Remember all the member drives we tried. Now please join us.
We're back at zero. This is like Dallas when they lost Ewing Oil and they had to start a brand new oil company, and this is tough for our egos, guys, because we went from 1,500 members to right now 29. So,
well, hey, 29 within an hour is really not bad at all.
Listen, I figure if the people are fans of us and enjoy it, they will join this group. And if they don't, then they weren't much fans to begin with and probably weren't that interested. It was just a group on their many, many groups.
Whatever. The number is just a number. What we really care about is just all the discussion that's available there. And, of course, all the fun Photoshop that you guys all have.
It also, the biggest thing way on the old new group was that the picture was like a fucking thumbnail.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't even see it.
You couldn't see the great.
That's one of the best parts is exactly. The Photoshop each week we get of whatever event we're doing.
That's right. And on our new Facebook group, our Facebook page at facebook.com/reviewaway, you can see the this week's Photoshop displayed proudly right up there from usually from Ahmad, but also from Jay Hunter, and whoever decides to create such nice work we'll always showcase up there as well. I feel like this is almost an improvement to the previous page, because
we can do polls on this.
We can do polls finally. We can have episode archives if we wanted. We can
archives.
Yeah, we could show the archive right on the sidebar right there. So
that's
if you
fantastic.
Go click on the sidebar, it should be up and running by the time that you hear this. You can play the episodes right off of the episode archive sidebar. No more having to fuck around with copying links and whatnot. Just hit the play button right there. You can listen to every single show.
And we'll see if people are interested. I don't know if people want to go back and listen to any review and impacts or review a Raws. Like we can, I don't mind adding those at some point. But
okay,
show if anyone has interest. I don't know if you want to go back and listen to Raw episodes and stuff. But
I think people might. People might. But okay, we'll see. We'll see how much demand there is for anything. And of course, everything is a work in progress. Please share the link with various people.
Yeah, please whore this out, everybody. We want to get as many people as possible to. let's try and get a fraction of 1,500 because I don't think they're all going to be migrating over. Nor is it easy to post something on the old group saying we've moved because it'll be buried within a minute.
Yeah, yeah. So
God, that thing sucks.
Whatever. It will just fuck off with the new with the old group and let's just focus on this from now on.
All right. Wei Ting, it's your pick for next week.
Oh.
So that means you probably haven't picked anything.
Fuck.
There's a bit of a pattern we've been doing where one week you choose and one week I choose.
Shit. Give me a second.
All right. Take a few minutes.
We should really just start leaving these up to the listeners, right?
Do you want to make it a poll?
Let's make it the very first poll this week.
Okay, so this is going to appear on Thursday, and...
Well, it can even appear on Sunday, when this comes out.
Well, let's leave it up till Sunday, because we need to watch this show at some point.
Are you going to watch it this weekend?
I might.
Oh, okay. Well, then how are we going
to... No, we can do it next week. I can watch it next week.
Let's leave the poll up for the day, okay? We'll put it up right now.
Well, wait a minute. We need candidates, though. If we're going to put a poll question, we need options.
Okay, you and I will call... Oh. All right, fine. We'll come up with some candidates and just go on the Facebook group right now. You'll find a poll, choose it, and by the end of Raw, let's say, we'll close the poll and we'll make our choice, and that'll be the show that we review for next week.
All right.
All right.
It's in your hands.
All right, fine.
Okay.
I'll come up with the choices.
Let's finish off, everybody, with a rap group called Alley Life. Out with the old, in with the new.
Oh, man.
Get rap like that, cause I move it. And I'm gonna sit around for the revenue split. When the band all together, take it better through trips.